Soviet Social Republics. And they'd say, oh, but aren't you so glad that you're in America? I said, well, I know a lot of Russian filmmakers. They have a lot more freedom than I have. All they have to do is be careful about criticizing the government.
Good evening, everyone. I am your host, Jason Miles, and welcome to another episode of This is Revolution Podcast. But once again, I am gentrifying White Guy Wednesday with another fun episode of Pop Life, where we take a deep dive into something I always write about. I always talk about. A lot of my video essays revolve around my feature length that I finally wrapped up all of my flubs on. We have all the transition lines. We're ready to go. Kayfabe on pop culture. If you're new to the channel, please hit like. Please hit subscribe, as we're constantly adding new shows and doing new episodes and stuff like this. So make sure you hit that notification bell so you know whenever we go live. Because Wednesday, historically, is a day for us that sometimes we take. But no, not anymore. Not anymore. There's a demand. It's a fever. Also, before we start, there's big news here in the TIR camp. I'm finally going to have my work published. An essay I wrote a little while ago called I Was a Teenage Anarchist, of course, based off the Against Me song, is going to be available to read in print. A little mini book. So excited. And I'm going to be speaking about it next Wednesday at Pomona College, and there should be a link up to that event for that. And also, we'll be doing a book launch next month in the Bay Area. Still trying to finalize the date and who's all going to be there, because that's going to be a fun thing. What is it going to be? Some people from the punk and metal world, some old school cats that I've known for a while, get them up there, talk about the piece, and then we're gonna have, you know, a fun deep dive into hearing some of these fun stories that I got to hear for so many years. That being said, it's time for me to introduce the faceless voice of reason. She hasn't been around on the main show for a while, but she did join me in the champagne room last night. I see some of you in the comments were there and remember. Please welcome the one, the only M2 Song.
Hello, hello.
Hey, hey.
Good to see you.
Good welcome to not see you. I just want people to know that she takes this so seriously that she does this when you call her with a video call as well.
Yep.
She answers the phone with her hand in front of the thing like that. But because we've hung out and hugged in real life, I know what M2 Song looks like. Mm-hmm. I can spot her in a room. I still think it's the funniest thing in the world that this one person came up to me in the New York show, and he was like, where's M2 Song, man? I want to meet her. I want to meet her so bad. And you were like standing right behind him. And then you just walked away, and I was like, oh, she was right behind you. He's like, no way. You're like Batman to that guy.
Funny.
That's what's so cool about what you're able to do. I you know, until the wheels fall off, you will remain faceless.
I agree. Thank you.
I think it's really cool. Were you a Boondocks fan?
I was a huge Boondocks fan.
was it must-see TV for your generation, like The Cosby Show was for my generation?
Like The Cosby Show? I don't know.
You don't think it was must-see to that level?
Must-see TV like The Simpsons.
Family Guy? The second go-around of Family Guy. Nobody watched it the first time. Second go-around.
I watched the first go-around.
Of course you did. You're going to be that guy right now?
Of course I did.
You're going to be the I saw first.
The Family Guy.
I watched it. I was one of the 17 people that watched it on Fox.
I had nothing to do. So, I watched it.
I wonder if Bert watched The Family Guy. Bert, just nod in the green room. Did you watch the first go-around of Family Guy? He says, yeah, he could be lying. He lives in Los Angeles.
He lives in Los Angeles. He could be lying.
You know how those L.A. people are. Even though he's not from L.A. Don't get it twisted. Make him say water.
Yes.
He is from the East Coast, like MT Tucson. Oh, look, he's putting his proof in the...
bona fides.
His bona fides. You guys can't see it. There's a in-show chat, and he is just mad now in the in-show chat. Well, I'm excited to hear, see what you guys have to say about the Boondocks. One of the most groundbreaking shows to me in the last 20 years. That did a masterful job of telling stories of race and class was Aaron Magruder's Boondocks from 2005. The show opens with one of its main characters, Huey Freeman, a young black 10-year-old boy who's just been transplanted from his Southside Chicago home to live with his 8-year-old brother and their grandfather in the fictional suburban town of Woodcrest. In the opening episode, Huey is telling a captive older rich white audience that, quote, Jesus is black, Ronald Reagan is the devil, and the government is lying about 9/11. The white audience erupts into chaotic violence from the words spoken by Huey Freeman. These words to Huey are the truth, and white people are never to hear the truth because, according to his grandfather, you never tell white people the truth. The scene is just a dream, but later in the episode, Huey gets a chance to utter the words again, hoping they will be the spark to start the revolution. But he is shocked to find that nothing happens. The captive audience of rich white people simply clap. They patronizingly compliment him on how well he speaks and don't seem to fear his condemnation of the system or his utterance of truth. It was this discussion about this scene and the show with my good friend and author Bertram Cooper that inspired this show that we're having tonight. So please welcome, coming all the way live from one of the hippest parts of Southern California. I'm sure he's in the bowels of Silver Lake somewhere. No, he's shaking his head laughing at me. He knows he lives in Silver Lake.
The bowels of Silver Lake.
He's so hip, he's wearing cross colors right now in a non-ironic fashion. Please welcome Bertram Cooper.
I wish... You know, one day if I get like a lifetime achievement award or something like that, if you could just string together all of your intros for me over the years into one long description.
Jeez.
I live in the burbs out here. Like, I live in the valley. All right. Nothing happens here.
Porn happens there.
Porn does happen. I mean, it used to before OnlyFans. Now I don't.
No.
The comedy's kind of tanked out here.
You know that you probably... Bert lives next to somebody famous's kid.
Nah. You can come visit, bro.
It's like, I live next to a dentist. I live in between two dentists.
I live next to an amazing, like, Asian veteran who meticulously, like, changes his flags for every holiday and game season. We have like a King of the Hill relationship where I've lived here for like almost 4 years. Mm-hmm. You've never done more than this. All I know is his name is Vince. I don't even think he knows my name. And it's one of my favorite relationships of all time, honestly.
You're like, just the colored fella next door.
Isn't he the colored fella too?
We're not trying to be the only colored one around here.
And then the next street over is just like, I don't know, like this overweight white dude who's got to be riddled with diabetes who just has a massive boat.
At least people in your neighborhood, their boats are something they use, unlike where I was living when I was living.
He doesn't use it. I've never seen that boat taken out.
Look, again, people used to dump their boat on my street, and that is like the worst thing ever to see boats dumped. But let's talk about the Boondocks and not your suburban struggles.
It's hard out here.
The first episode was something you and I were talking about because you had said something that so resonated with me when you said this is the way that a lot of these you didn't say black academics. What term did you use? That's a Pascal term.
I think I referenced just people with the blackest in the room experience, but I'm not sure if I used like a specific term. But I mean, you laid it out. The whole first episode, Yui's having this dream about how if he tells the truth, you know, if he tells the truth as he sees it, if he brings his knowledge of how black people are living and, you know, just tells this white garden party, people start throwing chairs, beating each other to death, all that. So he takes the mic and he explains, you know, Ronald Reagan's the devil, 9/11's an inside job, and all the white people just break into clapping about how articulate he is. At another point, he's talking to, like, you know, they're standing above him now and he's talking to this crowd and he's explaining his point again, and they just start saying what an articulate young man. His grandfather yokes him up and he's like, you can't be telling white people none of this, you know, this, that, and the third. And he's like, they don't give a shit what we're saying. They're rich. They don't care about nothing. And then a little bit later in the episode, Uncle Ruckus is saying, you know, singing that song, you know,
don't trust them new niggas
over there with the banana peeling fingers and all that shit. And two white women stop for a second, and then one turns to the other and is like, I think it's okay when they say it. And then they break into applause. And, you know, if anyone's familiar with my writing, what I've talked about, you know, when I'm watching this, it feels like just kind of the template for a lot of black pop creators' careers, which is, you know, they grow up mostly in these types of suburbs, surrounded, occluded by white folk. They feel like they have some window into what black folks are going through, and they imagine that they can get their show out there, or they get their book out there, or they get to speak in front of a bunch of white folks, that revealing their truth is some radical act, where Huey Freeman hopes it is. But nobody cares. They just clap. They applaud. And then, you know, real life, we know what happens. They hand out Pulitzers and MacArthur Fellowship grants. And, you know, Twitter gives your anti-racist program, you know, several million dollars to keep operating out of Boston University and whatnot. The difference is that Huey is depressed.
You win an Oscar if you're Jordan Peele.
What was that?
You win an Oscar if you're Jordan Peele.
You win an Oscar. And yeah, that was the part of my comment. It was like, this is the formula for, like, this is Issa Rae, this is Donald Glover, this is, you know, just Jordan Peele's whole career. And, you know, seeing in the Boondocks, you get to feel the hope that this will be radical, but all it gets you is applause. Depresses Huey, but in real life, I mean, all these folks take their flowers, as it were, and seem pretty happy about it.
And for me, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Toussaint, it's kind of how I feel a lot of the race reductionist talk is. Like, we did an episode recently with Zine Magubane, and in that episode we talked about kind of the white privilege discourse, and, you know, the comments that people make about that, the books people write about that, the idea of all this, all of the elite capture of these projects, Ty Wo's book, it really has this story that isn't a story about like class struggle, but it's always a story of a united black front against this white army, and you have to break through the whiteness to get anything done. Nothing's going to happen until we get through every heart of every white person, because racism is baked into that heart of the people and the country. And you kind of, to me, you just kind of end up having the Huey Freeman speech, which is part of the show over and over again. You kind of see a lot of respectability politics in the show. I mean, the Martin Luther King episode I think we talked about this on air one day, Tucson, is the most pull up your pants Bill Cosby thing ever. You know, it's go ahead, Bert. I'm sorry.
Well, somebody mentioned the comments, and it's important. Like they mentioned, you know, Magruder started the comic strip while he was in college, and he is. That's what I think is part of, or that's what I relate to the show. Like I am also in this formula. You know, I am writing for. I'm writing for the New York Times. I'm writing for the Atlantic. I'm writing for this large white liberal audience. But hopefully, with the awareness that Magruder has, that like it's not about to bring in the revolution. But yeah, Magruder is a college kid. I just wanted to, and I think he also got to go to like one of those, at least for a few years, like nice Catholic Jesuit high schools. But yeah, just one of the commenters brought that up, and yeah, he's.
I mean, you can hear it. You can hear it in the music of the show. You can kind of see it. This is before anime is really popular in the black community. And I thought that was like a really cool art style to do for the show. Because I think me and Magruder are around the same age.
And it actually comes out, I mean, you would know all about this, Jason, just with like the stuff. Nah, like that term Amerime is real hard to define because all throughout the 80s, they started importing Japanese art to do American shows. So things that we think of as American animation, a lot of times are actually Japanese impressions of American. But
Transformers.
And then they also started, you know, outsourcing big parts of just the whole show, like even Batman animated series, which seems such classic American animation. But to the Boondocks credit, you know, it comes out the same year as Avatar: The Last Airbender. So it's doing this push of American inspired like Japanese artwork and the anime choreography like at the same time.
Oh, he's trying to do that, which I think the show, I really believe the show is revolutionary. And while I actually read a few Magruder interviews and some of the responses I saw him make. And again, these are interviews he was doing in the early 2000s. Some of these before even the Obama election. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure the man's politics have matured over time. You know, I can't say that the way he felt in 2008 is the way he feels in 2023. I don't know.
He's 49 years old now, by the way.
He's older than me.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. But I thought the show visually was genius. There's another thing he does in the show. I don't know if you guys noticed. Maybe some of the people watching the show noticed. The kids have different outfits.
Yeah.
All these cartoon shows, even these adult ones, it, you know, it's all the same clothes every time. But with the Boondocks, sometimes they even have like different hairstyles. I was like, this is pretty interesting. And you pointed this out, Bert, that no one on the show is perfect.
Yeah, nobody on the show is I mean, the lens that we would use today is we would look at the show and we would ask, you know, how's it treating black women? How's it treating black queer folk? How's it treating the black underclass? Is it homophobic? And we'd be looking for these, you know, signifiers that when somebody says something homophobic, they get their comeuppance, or, you know, the black underclass, somehow they end up being inside of the joke. The thing is that he's got so many black characters. There's, you know, this whole diversity of black folks, all the different classes, the different temperaments you meet. I mean, if you grew up in a black community or a black family, like you recognize these people. And instead of ending every episode kind of smoothing it over and getting back to this idea that all of us are tied together in this naive unity, he kind of just leaves the audience to feel what they feel about these individuals. I mean, even Huey, who's, you know, ostensibly the most intelligent character on the show, he has moments where he just sticks to his guns out of stubbornness. Like after the whole nigger moment episode, he ends that by saying like he can't blame this on the white man, and then he thinks for a second, he's like, what am I talking about? Of course he's gonna find a way to blame it on the white guy. Everybody has these flaws, and Magruder doesn't try to explain them away. In particular, what makes, you know, the show stand out compared to modern shows, he doesn't try to explain it away so that everything ties back to this big systemic reason why that human is acting that way, which some people may like, some people don't like me. I love the diversity, like the number of black characters on that show. Like you and I, you just told me a few hours ago that it was your favorite episode or favorite moment, Jason, but with I can't pronounce his name because he gave himself them long Islamic names, but he's friends with Cairo and he does the whole thing. Where are your poems, my brother?
Where's your poems? Where's your priest?
Where's your sandals? Where's your poems? Talking about revolution. And you know, he's in the mode of preach, of bugging out, of just a number of characters. But I bring it up because, like, you really don't see some of these archetypes in black shows anymore. They kind of have, it's really shrunk the number of people. And you can be pretty sure that even if they have a smidge of class hostility, that they're going to wrap it up and they're going to mean it unironically when they say, really, it is all of us against the white guy.
Well, I mean, I think that's where the Boondocks takes some inspiration from The Simpsons in that you have a neighborhood. It's peopled, you know, with all kinds of people, and they're not all the same kind of people. It gives you the chance to have the kind of breadth and depth to look at black people when you get to have a whole neighborhood.
How do we look at, so there's two characters that are not black, but they are voiced by black people.
One
of which sadly is no longer with us. Charlie Murphy is the voice of Ed Wunstler III, who's supposed to be George Bush. If you look at his face, he looks like a young George Bush Jr. And Dick Cheney, who is Gin Rummy, his partner in crime, is supposed to be Dick Cheney, and that's voiced by Samuel L. Jackson. And they're supposed to be two very wealthy people. Charlie Murphy's character is the heir kind of to this Rupert Murdoch-esque. Who would you say that Ed Wunstler is supposed to be? Like, he's kind of an amalgamation of every mega rich person of the pre-super tech era. So Facebook isn't really a thing yet, I don't think, at this time. I don't think it's as big as it is now. Twitter, I don't even think, exists when this show starts. So we're still looking at people like Rupert Murdoch, who owned several media companies, as like the big, evil, powerful guy that pulls all the strings. These people own banks and they own the way we see and eat media. And they'd have some episodes, I think, in the first season, maybe one of the best episodes that Toussaint talks about that she likes. And I'd love for you to talk about this episode, Toussaint, which is the one where, so Thomas Dubois, the district attorney, black district attorney who has a white wife. We probably have to talk about the R. Kelly episode at some point, because that's still one of the funniest things I've ever seen on television. But the episode where his young mixed daughter, Jasmine, wants to have a lemonade stand.
That's right.
Do you want to talk about that? How the Ed Wunstler character plays the long game with this child, Toussaint?
This poor child. She just wants to have a horse named Sammy Davis Jr. Which I think is the name of the a pet on Different Strokes.
It was the goldfish. The
goldfish's name was Sammy Davis Jr. So that's what they took it from, which is very interesting. So she starts a lemonade stand, and one of the customers is the father, Wunstler Sr. And he purchases some lemonade for her from her, but he also ends up going into business with her and hustling her out of her lemonade stand. It's just the absolute pettiness of it. It's just not lost on me. You hustled a little girl out of her lemonade stand because she wanted a pony named Sammy Davis Jr. He kept teasing her with the pony, too.
The story of her and the lemonade stand, to me, is so similar to so many other stories. Like, that's almost every record deal that anyone ever gets is the same way. It's like you still want the fame. And then after it's all said and done and you wait for your payout, it's like, oh, well, you thought these cups cost money? the lemons cost money. You know, if you want to keep this dream alive, you got to do this. You have to sell way more lemonade because the expenses just went up.
She was working herself to the bone to sell that lemonade.
To save once it gets said in the, like a few episodes earlier, right? Like, I mean, in the itis.
Oh, he does it again to Grandpa with the itis. Yeah, Grandpa knows how to make this food that puts people to sleep. It's an old joke. It's called the itis, right? When you eat a heavy meal and go to sleep.
And they start off with like, you know, wants that park across the street. And he says the price is too high. So he essentially invites a black business in there that has this food that's terrible for you. The white people get addicted to it, but it's almost like a play on like liquor stores, or if you're more conspiratorial, crack. The white people get addicted. They start mugging each other to get money to get another Luther. And then it ends up basically with them making fun of like, or ridiculing white people at two different levels, one of them being evil and one of them just kind of being like a pawn down here at the bottom. But a girl who was very attractive in the beginning, white woman, she gains a bunch of weight. So then she sues Grandpa for her having gained so much weight eating the Luther, which was what, like a fried, like two fried onions, bacon, a burger, three burgers between like two fried donuts.
It was like on two donuts. It was just every horrible thing you could fry.
Luther is real. It exists.
I had to Google that, Tucson, like just, and it was ridiculous. That was real. But eventually all these lawsuits are costing, you know, the restaurant money. So when Wansler says he's shutting it down, but the episode ends basically with Grandpa lost the restaurant. Everything is mostly going back to normal. And then Wansler comes out, looks across the street, and the park now has fences around it and says Wansler Construction. Because basically he did all this to lower the price of the neighborhood so that he could then buy a park. Now he'll build it back up and it will go through. I don't know if there's a word for reverse or.
Well, I think that everybody wants to say gentrification, but it wasn't even just that simple. He couldn't get the park because it was public land and they weren't going to sell it to him. But it was so devalued and criminal that it's like, well, now you need me. Now you need this private money to come in and fix your park and build condos. This is done in 25 minutes. The show was genius. You don't have to agree with every episode. You know, we can get deep dive into the premise. I mean, there were some people that felt that Magruder, again, you know, these people that are going to write 10,000 word dissertations on why they don't like anything. But they felt that he played into certain stereotypes of black men with Tom's wife. Because she didn't necessarily like Tom, but that's like, well, they have a child. And early in the show, she definitely liked him, even during the R. Kelly episode. But she flirts with Usher. She likes the stink meaner version of Tom when he possesses. And I thought to myself, I was like, you know, I've watched every episode. Again, one of my children is named after Riley. So my ex-wife and I watched our fair share of the Boondocks. Tom's wife's character is very sympathetic and loving to him. And it's just, I don't think they were trying to say anything. I could be wrong. But I don't think they were trying to say anything about white people's love of a certain type of black man, unless you guys disagree.
That's why they thought stereotypes of black men came in. Really?
Yeah.
I think they had done a pretty good job of laying the groundwork and establishing that Tom is just a weak person, which may not be the most attractive. And they really emphasized that for a long time before Stink Meter like returns. And so, I mean, yeah, you could say it's playing into a stereotype, but you could also say that the actual joke is just pivoting on Tom's cowardice and his softness. And now all of a sudden he's assertive. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, if you look at the relationship he has with his wife, it is not like she hates him. It's not like it's Peg Bundy and Al. Right.
Sleeping in the choke position.
Yeah. Yeah, they actually get along quite well in most of the show, and they I think they just wanted to write in a divorce because you can. It's a cartoon.
You know, I was Googling different comments just about you know, and I did see a lot of dissertations. I saw a lot of dissertation style stuff. Not as much anymore, but just about the Boondocks. And you know, I'm interested in y'all's, you know, thoughts on this. It was weird to think about it in light of all of the white gaze literature and this whole idea that we should be making stuff without concern for the white gaze, and we shouldn't be concerned with how whites are perceiving us, and that's all just respectability politics. And I mean, you even saw that same sort of criticism come up when people were talking about how black boomers respond to Will Smith slapping Chris Rock versus, you know, Gen Z, how they feel about it. But a lot of these dissertations were awfully concerned that, like, white people who do not have a rich understanding of, like, black news and whatnot are just going to run away with the stereotypes. Like, it felt much more catering to the white gaze, but I don't know what you all think.
You think that, the show?
No, the criticisms. Oh. The criticisms were very worried about, what are white people going to think?
You know, if you wake up in the morning worried about what white people think, then you have that's your own fucking hang up. Like, do you wake up in the morning worried about what white people are going to say when you're writing something for the New York Times? Like, oh my God. Do you worry about what niggas is going to say? Like, do you worry at all about what anybody's going to say?
Any conscious black message? I'm not worried. I mean, I'm assuming somebody's going to say something. I know I'm writing alone in a room, but I'm trying to have a conversation with somebody. So yeah. I'm hoping somebody wants to talk, but I'm not worried about it. I don't know.
Right? That seems strange to me. I mean, I'm glad that they didn't worry about that, because I felt like the first few episodes, it felt that it was a person that was really free. Because again, you don't originally this was going to be on network television. And some deals fell through, and then Cartoon Network picks it up. And
it's going to be on Fox.
It's going to be on Fox, yeah. So when you're going to be late night on a kids-ish network, you have a little more freedom. You have a little more autonomy to do what you want to do. Apparently, this Cartoon Network people told them when they saw the pilot, they felt it was too networky, and they didn't like it. And he really lets loose with some of his ideas. I mean, the Gangsterlicious episode, for a lot to this day, I think for a lot of people, it's like, whoa, that was crazy. I didn't see that coming. But they set it up oh so well, because at the time, the Source Awards and the BET Awards, maybe to this day, are kind of, do this BET still have awards?
I think so. Yeah.
I mean, they were kind of jokes.
Also, just on, like, just, you know, run with BET, and obviously his episode that got, you know, gets pulled, and the flack that he got for that. You know, you flash forward to 2020, and the owner of BET, owner and founder, you know, black billionaire, maybe the only one in America, I can't recall. You know, he's quoted saying he prefers the devil he knows to the one he doesn't as a businessman. Essentially, Trump's better than Biden. From a businessman perspective, and that's the founder of BET. So I just feel like that's a win from a critter.
I mean, Bob Johnson, and there's the other black guy that who's the other black guy that paid for everybody's student loans a few years ago?
Robert Johnson.
Yeah, those two Negroes.
Robert were like, Smith.
It's one of them, nigga.
Smith.
Nigga John. I don't know.
Nigga John from around the way.
Like, I was watching before we went on. I was watching the BET episode where the woman running BET is talking like a cross between Dr. Evil and Eartha Kitt. It's hilarious. Because to me, BET went from being this network that it felt like it was trying to truly be a black network. There was news shows and it wasn't just singing and dancing. But do you remember the teen? What was the teen show called, Tucson?
On BET? Teen Summit.
Yeah, was it called Teen Summit?
Mm-hmm.
I only watched BET After Dark. best program.
You would watch BET After Dark. You
I was young.
Nigga, fine, nigga. Old stolen cable ass.
Hey, everybody's uncle needs a job, all right?
But, you know, even be, like all of that shit, I think by the time they sell that network and it just 106 and Park is on there and all that other shit, it just, it did change because I think they found that, look, nobody cares about our news, about us trying to do these fucking deep dive shows about shit. People just want to see singing and dancing, and that's what we're going to give you, a lot of singing and dancing. And I think Magruder, again, if he's around my age, he said he's 49, so he's like 3 years older than me, so he grew up watching those same shows as well. And looked at BET in a similar lens that I looked at BET, especially in the late 90s, early 2000s. And I think it's an accurate portrayal. I also think his portrayal of Tyler Perry was pretty right on.
The name of the show was called Pause. The name of the episode.
And Tyler Perry got pissed. Yeah.
He called people. He called people up.
He made calls and said, this is, maybe we should reconsider our business.
Yeah.
This is what you're airing.
Like, they had episodes that were just so over the top. There was people that got mad. Al Sharpton apparently got mad about the MLK episode because MLK ends the episode, says, I'm not going to be with you niggas and I'm going to Canada. But the MLK episode, I think, hits people a certain way because I have tons of friends that love that episode. And I go, were you really watching it?
Right.
Or do you just like the fact that you think that would happen to Martin Luther King if he came back? There is something interesting about MLK coming back, if you will, and making the rounds on these popular shows and people not digging his message because their idea of him is stuck in I Have a Dream. And hearing the anti-war king during the Iraq or the Afghanistan invasion for them is kind of, nah, that guy wouldn't exist.
Right.
And we would throw him to the dogs and we forget about him. I don't know if that would necessarily happen. I think MLK, if he was to come back, would probably align himself with someone like Oprah, which they joke about in the show. He talks about Oprah as a damn fine woman. Because that's what he did in real life. That's what most of people. We talked about that with the Jesus show. Whenever you're a big organizer, you're also a big fundraiser. So of course he would be around a certain stratum of black bourgeoisie.
And he would be answering, like if he was around right now, he would be doing what all the other organizers have to do, which is to constantly update their image when they've been around as long as him. Like right now, he'd be answering for his treatment of Byard Rustin.
Oh, God.
He would. Yes.
Be dragged. Dragged for the treatment of Byard Rustin. Like, come on.
Interrupt his speech like he was Bernie Sanders.
He would be doing an apology tour just to, you know, come on.
And that's what makes that episode so funny, is he's trying to do things that he did back in the day, and of course it doesn't work. And then they have the Martin Luther King birthday jam and he can't get into the club. That's the funniest thing to me.
Also, his face on everything, where I really should have been paid for this.
He said, I should have a say so in these things. I really should have a say in these things. I thought it was funny. But when he does the big speech at the end, I'm like, I had to think back to 2005, 2006. Because, we have to kind of go in the Wayback Machine almost 20 years ago.
Yeah.
And if we put that episode out now, it would probably be very boring. Martin Luther King would go on Democracy Now! A big NPR tour. It wouldn't get on the show.
Because people would be talking about his potential sex tapes and his track record with women and LGBT.
White women. Mm-hmm.
That would have been it.
Yeah, there would be no democracy. Cornel West would be distancing himself from Dr. King right now. Like, I never really liked that dude.
Disappearing into the bushes.
Who, by the way, is drawn in the... we can just keep doing these circles.
He's drawn on the R. Kelly episode. Someone says MLK going on Joe Rogan. Who says that? Antonio says MLK going on Joe Rogan. I was a slave to the flesh, Joe.
What's Uncle Rucker saying?
White woman was so like, thick in Chicago, Joe. You don't know.
They smell like lemon and pledge furniture cleaner.
They smell like lemon and pledge furniture cleaner. Yeah. They make these white women different nowadays, Joe Rogan.
Jesus.
So much ass. So much ass. Sorry, I'm going to stop now.
God damn.
Can you imagine? So sorry. I'm going to get so much hate.
Yo, somebody's saying that's crazy, Martin. By the way, you ever done DMT? That's your own question.
That is funny.
I have not, Joe, but have you seen a BBL?
I mean, the closest we'll get is when the FBI releases those sex tapes. We'll get to see people's responses. Pog Chaser MLK is Jason's best character yet. Somebody clip this without context.
That's the new character, modern day MLK, fucking walking around playing black hip hop.
I think you got, I don't know if this made on the show, but earlier in like the room, I think you were talking, maybe the viewership for the Boondocks came up, but I was looking that up. They mostly had it for like HBO, but I was surprised that it was, you know, its episodes were pulling in over 1 million viewers, which was a lot for anything on Comedy Central. Like, that stacks up with any, really any show that was popular on Comedy Central, A Broad City, Key and Peele, anything on FX, really. Like, Boondocks was in there pulling those sorts of numbers. And yeah, I don't know. I think what it was is you were wondering if it was like a cultural, like, necessity to watch it.
It felt like it was this thing that I remember all my friends, we talk about it, like, when we'd see each other, it, like, because I was an adult by the time I'm watching the Boondocks. Again, we're about to have our third child, who is named. This is middle name. She would not let it be his first name because there's a J theme with our children's names. I won't get into that. But, and he asked me too, Bert. He asked me a year ago. He's 17 now, and he looked at me and goes, "Dad, did you really name me after a cartoon called The Boondocks?" I was like, "Fuck yeah, we did."
Is that your son's voice?
He does talk like that. He's a very deep voice, and he's taller than me.
Well, that's not hard. You're not even 5'10".
Wow, I'm gonna walk to New York and shake the shit out of you.
Black woman coming at the height. I'm happy.
But the episode that we would watch over and over again that would have me and my ex-wife in tears, like she was pregnant in tears, was the R. Kelly episode where Riley yells at Thomas Dubois for prosecuting R. Kelly. And again, this is before all these A&E documentaries, which also feels like a really disgusting industry, on R. Kelly come out. This is when the only people talking about R. Kelly are hood cats because motherfuckers are selling the tape at the barbershop. Are you old enough to remember that, Bert?
Or is like, I'm old enough. I didn't watch it because I'm not in the golden shower.
Yeah, I'm not trying to watch child pornography. But I remember so vividly everyone that had seen the tape was like, oh, that's him. No one was denying it.
No.
But there still was this air of among people that had saw the tape. Hey, this is wrong. This is the prosecution of a black man. No.
Yeah.
Can't do this. And in that episode, they mockingly have Julian Bond, I think, Cornel West, and I think Dick Gregory are the anti-Free R. Kelly protesters that get into a big fight. And Tom or R. Kelly's lawyer is Kunstler. What's his name?
William Kunstler.
Yeah.
Voiced by Adam West.
Voiced by Adam West.
Hearing Adam West's voice saying he loves his black sisters is just...
They knew who to get for voices on that show.
For sure. You know who originally was the voice of Riley in that speech? Was Alicia Keys. He was going to have two people. And he said there was something about it that she just wasn't hitting the Huey part right. And so Regina King comes in and does both voices, and she, you know, nails that role. And that, I think that R. Kelly speech, for a lot of people, more so than the Garden Party even, really put that show as like, okay, this is our show that we can. It's all satire, but we love it because it's just so true. And we didn't know the full horrors of R. Kelly. Because let's remember this. By the time that actual young girl gets on the stand, she was 21.
Shit.
I believe that thing happened when she was like 14 or 15. She's like 21 years old by the time she finally gets on the stand. That's how good his legal team was at controlling the way the narrative was going to come out. And when you watch that episode of the Boondocks and Huey stops, they're dancing. The lawyer plays a song. And Thomas Dubois, the district attorney, has all the evidence. And the joke about the tape is when they play it, he looks into the camera and he's got his Social Security number tattooed on his ass.
And the defenses that his lawyer throws up, one is like, I mean, the girl in the video is 14, but she was black. Unlike Tom, whose wife is white.
Whose wife is white.
That was one defense. The other was, all this evidence may look airtight, but it's just a veil for racism. All it is racism. And then starts talking about how they just fear R. Kelly. They fear his power and what he means to the system, which sets up Huey to do the speech, which is, you know, pretty even keeled, where he's just like, you know, the government punishes and executes a ton of black men on like wrongful charges, wrongful causes, does all sorts of terrible shit to the black community. But that does not mean that every black man who's persecuted is Nelson fucking Mandela.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I love that line. There was a joke. I can't remember who it was. I think it was Chris Rock. And people said, Tupac and Biggie got assassinated. He said, nah, them niggas got shot. And that's kind of how I felt about R. Kelly. But again, you're right. He's not really saying this man is a bad man and he did some things that maybe he should go down for. He's saying, look, if you love this dude, hide. There's a line. He goes,
oh, yeah.
Hide his camcorder.
You love R.
Introduce
Kelly.
Him to some older women.
If you love R. Kelly, get him some help. Introduce him to some older women.
Which is funny because, again, at that moment, we thought the pinnacle of this man's dubious nature was going to be the fact that he, while having sex with another 14-year-old girl, we forget that there was two girls in a row that were both underage.
And it got covered by two different shows because Chappelle did it too.
Yeah, Chappelle made a joke about peeing on people, but he was peeing on children.
Yeah.
And we find out that it's not just children. It's women of all ages got caught up in the R. Kelly thing.
Yeah.
And that for me is like, whoa, like this is heavy. And even that show, it's very lighthearted at the end, right? It's like R. Kelly wins. And in real life, he did win for a minute, right?
Yeah.
Longer than a minute.
It's amazing how long his run was. It was an open secret for a long time.
But then what do you get? You get the protection of that secret is racism. That becomes kind of the narrative of what's the woman's name that made the R. Kelly thing for A&E? I feel like you know her too.
I don't.
She went to your high school.
Oh, wow. I mean, she went to your high school.
No.
Real fame high school.
New.
Dream. Everybody famous went to Jason's high school.
Dream Hampton, is that her name? Dream Hampton. Yeah. I mean, that becomes kind of this all happened because this was black women and nobody gives a shit about black women. It's kind of the theme of her first R. Kelly thing. But there wasn't just black women in there too. Like he was kind of, it was poor women. Actually not all of them were poor. He was kind of across the board, not a cool dude, right? He was a horrible man. But there's a long list of a lot of famous musicians that have done some disgusting things to women. I mean, Chuck Berry. Yikes.
Indeed.
Gene is in here. Russell Brand. He's a Russell Brand. Yeah, there's one Russell Brand. Ted Nugent adopted a kid. There's a few people that I think have adopted underage women so they can fuck them.
Is the dude from Aerosmith one of them, or was his girl
Steven Tyler?
Yeah.
I think he did something foul.
He was with underage girls too.
Yeah. It's just like you shake your, it's like, yeah, R. Kelly was one of many horrible men in show business. And the R. Kelly episode, I think, really shows how we can look past a lot of that shit, especially when it has the veneer of racism. Like, oh, I don't, I mean, again, he can't, there's no song he can write that's going to free him.
In the Name of Love was close.
He might come out with a sequel to Believe I Can Fly, and that could turn things around.
He can't do a goddamn thing.
All right.
You really think he could write a song?
No, of course not. He's not a rapper
in 1996. Like, he can't do a record from jail. You heard R. Kelly's record from jail?
But during his run, when he was getting away with it, those songs were keeping him afloat. And people were like, I'm ready to ignore it. If he's got another Step in the Name of Love in him, I am ready to ignore all his shenanigans.
I don't think so. It goes back to the whole MLK thing. MLK is, everybody's got an MLK story. Racist white people got an MLK story they love. But he can't come back now.
No, he can't.
No, you're about to be Me Too'd, MLK. Sorry.
I was interested in, like, this show, I mean, just by happenstance, when it ends in, like, 2014, that is... You know, if you put these arbitrary lines on things, that's an end of an era for how, like, black media is presented and how that media, you know, relates to white folks. Because, like, prior to 2014, having an opinion on race was, like, it was a nice to have for liberals. You know, you could be progressive even if race wasn't something you had clear opinions on. But 2014 is when we get the case for reparations from Ta-Nehisi Coates. And then the very next year, we get Between the World and Me. And all of a sudden, you know, it becomes a threshold requirement to be a progressive liberal. You have to have an opinion on racial questions. You have to be reading certain books. And, you know, Boondocks and some of the other shows at that time like Chappelle's Show. That was this show that did satire, that was apparently smart, that was, you know, winning things like Peabody Awards and things like that, and was, you know, a big deal. But people in, like, you know, the barbershop around me or my dad also watched the show. Like, they knew about it. I had relatives who watched the show. They referenced those jokes. They laughed at it. Whereas, like, after 2014, 2015, a lot of the shows that get lauded the way that those shows did, I can only talk to certain people about them. Like,
they don't exist. Well, also, too, the way we consume media really changes around that time, too. We really get away from the bundle deal. And once these big networks want to make Netflix money, and people start going, well, we can stream too.
Right.
It really changes from people going, if you have means, you go, I have a satellite or some sort of cable package, but I also have Netflix. So the video store is gone now, right? And then no longer can you just have Netflix. You know, you got to have Disney if you want to watch certain things for the kids or the Marvel stuff. And then, you know, you got to have Paramount, and now Amazon has a streaming service and they have certain movies on it, and it just changes, and you can watch whatever you want to watch whenever you want to watch it, just because you want to watch it. And the curated cable stuff, there was already a problem people had. There's nothing on TV. I'm old enough to remember when there was like 8 channels. You've got to figure it out. you'll watch something. And then, you know, we had some bootleg cable for a while, and then there was 48.
Oh, now it's okay.
Oh, yeah. You know I love fucking with you, Bert. Ghetto ass mama and your uncle.
8 channels, Jason.
Running up to the TV trying to watch Cinemax Between the Lines. Like, I know you changed the channel because it's on the channel next to the channel that's the bad channel. Well, then why are you giving me shit then, mama?
It was channel 88. You tell no lies. I don't know what to tell you.
Not 88.
So I think that kind of goes into the fact that these shows don't have the mass appeal. Even Deuces and Marrow don't have that mass appeal that like a Living Color had or a Boondocks had.
Deuces and Marrow.
Did I say it wrong?
Deuces. I was like, who and who?
One of them, Cooney Joe and the light skin one.
Cooney Joe and the light skin one. Deuces and bone marrow.
Bone marrow. Yeah. I think that changes. And so audiences are like super, super, super fragmented. So I don't know if we can have a moment like the Boondocks again. Because there's a show that I showed on here that I thought was actually pretty smart, which was called The Astronomy Club. And it was a sketch comedy show that, of all people, Kenya Barris produced.
Really?
And I think he just had his name behind it. I don't know how involved he was with the show, because it was pretty funny and smart. In the same vein of Chappelle's Show and stuff like Boondocks. Remember, I think I played the skit, the DJ Reparations skit on here.
Mm-hmm.
And it just didn't hit. It's hard for stuff to hit the way it did back in the day, because you don't have the same kind of captive audience.
Right.
And, you know, I feel like that analysis, like, not everyone works in what you just said, Jason, but a lot you can find it. A lot of people talk about it, but I don't hear yet the discussion that the Black audience is also experiencing that fracturing. Like, part of the promotion for these shows is still to talk about, you know, what percentage of the show is or isn't, you know, viewed by Black people, which I also get, you know, the value of that. Issa Rae was one example of this. But even in the write-up of Atlanta, Donald Glover, like, all of the discussion is if the fracturing is happening to, you know, white audiences, and all of them have gone to streaming, but Black folks were still, you know, all together watching the same shows, as long as they just put Black faces in front of us. We're there watching it, fucking enjoying it in between chapters of Between the World and Me, and reading whatever the fuck Ibram X. Kendi has coming out next. We're just wrapped.
I don't know too many Black people that have read that book outside of people that work in the field.
because that's what happened.
It goes back to the whole, who are you tap dancing for? Right? When everything is about race, race, race. We had a friend of mine worked at a, I forget what you call them. I call it a plantation. What do you call the old plantations that are like historical sites now in the South?
Other than plantation, I don't know.
There's like a, I think there's a name for it that's a little more politically correct. But she was talking one day on the show. Her name is Dr. Kelly Dietz. If you find any episode with Kelly Dietz, she was talking about, she wrote a book about the history of sugar. She's a historian and archaeologist. And part of she was doing this before the governors changed in Virginia. She was going through the segregated cemeteries and returning the remains of enslaved people to their ancestors. And she even returned Nat Turner's remains to his family from an archaeology project she was doing. And she was talking about working in this place and how sometimes like she felt like the white people kind of got off on hearing about the torture that went on there. And there's something to be said about that when these people peddle a lot of this race stuff. Bert's like, oh yeah.
I mean, it, you know, it took a, how to put it, John McWhorter put his stamp on it, the whole, you know, the metaphor of no terms acceptable, but I'm going to say woke, even though I acknowledge no terms acceptable. He put his stamp on that having religious aspects. But just to say, you know, the really simple version is that America, in terms of our religious factions, I mean, you don't, you can just leap out of a race. Go watch anything that's supposed to be portraying the Salem witch hunt or anything of classic America. There is always this faction that is into self-mutilation and moral self-deprecation as a way to achieve some sort of purity. And it's always combined with vigilantly watching who else is less pure than you. There's a long history of those sorts of ideas being appealing. So something like, you know, white fragility or anything that gives people both a chance to self-deprecate, but also be rigorous police of other people's moral purity. It has a long history of popularity here.
Tucson?
Yeah, those are definitely our Puritan roots. Maybe even Calvinist too. Self-flagellation also.
That's the word.
That's the word. See, I had the word and this column, big time columnist, this Hollywood columnist couldn't come up with it.
You're so big time you can't even show your face for fear of getting mobbed.
For fear of getting mobbed in New York. We do have to acknowledge. We have to acknowledge.
Too many viewers.
We have to acknowledge there's a character that we have not acknowledged yet, and that is Uncle Ruckus.
Uncle Ruckus. Who was originally a character that was Huey's friend. They made him a kid. Then they turned him into Uncle Ruckus for the show.
And what is your take on Uncle Ruckus?
He's great.
No relation.
No relation.
No relation. These Negroes with their wide nostrils breathing in all the good white man's air. You need a character like that. Who's just so on it. So many people have an inner Uncle Ruckus.
Yeah.
Man, I don't even know if I've... Maybe I'm just out of the discourse on Boondocks. But I haven't heard someone else phrase it as the inner Uncle Ruckus, which... I like more than the concept, Tucson. I like that more than just like self-hate. Is just like at a moment's notice, you can default to just look at this shifty, lazy-ass nigga. Yeah. You look over there and like, see, this is why white people have a problem with. I have a problem with this nigga too. Like just that voice that just so quickly can access every stereotype and use it to be like, I mean, a lot of black people cold, but not that nigga over there.
Who's the snitch guy that you always send me videos of, Tucson? The black guy that's a snitch.
What's his name?
His name is Charlton something.
Charlton White.
Yeah, Charlton that guy. White. That guy's Uncle Ruckus.
He is hilarious.
He is so Uncle Ruckus.
He is Uncle Ruckus, isn't he?
He's hella Uncle Ruckus.
Just raining on these rappers' parades, calling them degenerates.
The funny thing about Uncle Ruckus, he only hangs out with black people. Doesn't have any white friends.
Also, much like Jason Miles, he works everywhere.
Jason Miles got the Caribbean in him.
That's right.
Don't say that. We got to go full ADOS.
We coming for you, nigga.
You never go full ADOS.
Never go full ADOS. What were we going to do about ADOS? We were going to do some ADOS thing.
ADOS roundtable with Jason Miles.
I keep getting blacker and more darker and more blacker. Got the Revitalago.
Oh, shit. What were you saying last night about the ADOS? You said, or was it this morning? You said ADOS roundtable with Jason Miles.
Because you wanted to talk to the Haitian people in Mexico. You wanted to sit them down and interview them about their life and times. What do you eat for dinner?
I want to jump. I've seen this question come up a few times in the comments, but I want to ask the faceless, ever popular voice of reason, Toussaint. Any opinion on the portrayal of, you know, women, black women in Boondocks? Because I will say, like, rewatching the first season, as much as I love a lot of these characters, and I'm seeing, like, we don't have to get into it, but the nostalgia that this show generated in me and how much it made me kind of lament having moved out of my old class, you know, economically speaking, like, it hit me very, very hard. But even with that, I'm watching that as like, I don't know if there are a lot of great female characters in this. There's memorable ones, but most of them are like the stereotypes, like the hoe that's eating all the
guess who's guess hoe's coming to dinner. Remember, right. You're a cop. You got to tell me or it's entrapment. I'm just looking for a man to save me from myself. I guess a captain save a me.
I showed that episode to my girlfriend where, like, if anyone doesn't know, she's a stripper and we're out here in L.A., so she's got all strip club friends and they are looking for a sugar daddy left and right, and she found that episode hilarious. Like,
hilarious.
You know what Bert never does? Bert never hooks me up with any of her friends.
Yeah. Because the nipples ain't southward enough yet. I'm waiting for
we'll cover the drop.
Also, from what you tell me, you're on a tight budget, you know? So, I mean, if you get back into music full swing, you're good. You can be broke. You can ride that out till like the brakes fall off. But
just music, not even successful at it. Just like,
LA is not about success. It's just you don't give up, you know, and you tell everybody how you're not giving up.
Jesus, that is so sad and true and disgusting.
You've been here, bro.
Yeah, I have. I'll be there next week. I'll be in LA next week. Are you coming to the thing?
You didn't even invite me to the thing. I don't know what
the fuck. I didn't. I'm a piece of shit. I'm going to be in Pomona. But we'll talk about that in a minute.
Women in Boondocks.
What did you think about Jasmine? That's a woman in the Boondocks. A young woman.
She's the biggest representation of women in Boondocks. She's important. I mean, one of my issues is that she is there to kind of poke at Huey. To kind of make him understand that he's wearing a coat in 90 degree weather. That's her job, to do things like that. She's also more assimilated and she's also more confused. She's more of a kid. She's looking for direction. Otherwise there are not a lot of women characters in Boondocks that you could really point to.
I'm trying to think of any woman that's consistent on the show. The only women that are consistent on the show are like white women.
Yeah.
Barbara Billingsley is the voice of the old white lady. Or is it Marian Anderson? I forget.
Marian Anderson's still alive?
The mom from Happy Days.
Right.
I'm sorry. I think it's the mom from Happy Days, not Barbara Billingsley, because Barbara Billingsley should not be alive. She was on Leave It to Beaver. It's some old white woman.
When I'm watching the show, it's like, there's enough diversity, you know, enough different black male characters. Like Uncle Ruckus, like, that's a horrible human to be. Like, just flat out, he's fucking hilarious. That's a horrible person to me. That's balanced out with these other people. Nobody's perfect. They have good. They have bad. Like, I fucking love Riley. I love so much of the just ignorant shit that he won't let go. Like, that makes me happy. But they're all balanced out. Whereas even the female characters who get like these, there's a lot of cameo ones where it's just like, it's the hoe, or it's like Maybelline at Mo's funeral.
Yeah.
Right.
And she's just hideous. She looks like, you know, a caricature of the caricature from like the Friday After Next. Just like the mustache, busted teeth, apparently a bad hip. Like, yeah, the characters are not very fleshed out for the black woman.
Someone's taking notes. Bertrand doesn't like bad hips.
I mean, the black women characters that I can think of was the hoe. Aisha Tyler was on there for the kunk killer kung fu wolf bitch.
Kesha Freeman is my spirit animal.
Jesus.
I hope it's the hero one.
It's not a good thing. Which Kesha Freeman? I think the Kesha Freeman episode is hilarious. You have Granddad with the pull your pants up Kesha Freeman character. And you have Riley and Uncle Ruckus with the just raw. He's an animal. He was literally an animal. And then Huey just goes to Wikipedia and finds the real story out, and it's just so, you know.
It was sad. The half nigga, right?
He was the half black son of the owner of the house. Those two stories of slavery are hilarious. Because as we sit here in the year of our Lord 2023, these are the conflicting narratives of slavery that we still are fighting with to this day, right? You have the I think Grandpa
Santa's position, where it was just a very rigorous trade school. Some would say it was zero tolerance, like the best charter schools in New York, even.
When you hear Ruckus's story about slavery and they're just eating fried chicken and they're singing "Don't Trust the New Niggas" in unison. Do you hear that?
And the slave, the
Kesha Freeman song, "Gonna kill all these crackers."
And the slave saying, we got this slave shit going just the way we likes it. And then the slave master comes off over looking like General Custer. And he's like, now, come on, guys. I got you your food and your chicken and your house. Isn't it be great if you do a little bit of work, please?
Oh, man. So funny.
Yeah, with Super Chat.
Uh-oh. You want to read it, Tucson?
Sure. Mm-hmm. Super Chat from Sean McCallum. If you want to see the real-life Uncle Ruckus, look up H.K. Edgerton. He was able to charge five figures to speak at Neo-Confederate conventions.
Damn.
I am in the wrong line of work.
Yeah. I thought Jesse Lee Peterson was Uncle Ruckus.
Someone says I thought Jesse Lee Peterson was Uncle Ruckus. You know, the first time Ben Burgess was ever on this show, I gave him shit about that. Because you ever seen the episode? Ben Burgess was on Jesse Lee Peterson's show, Bert, and he didn't know much about Jesse Lee Peterson. I think he had watched a couple of videos or moments of videos. You know, he didn't go like, I'm going on Jesse Lee Peterson. You know, the producer had hit him up. I think he had just wrote the Give Him an Argument book. Mm. And
gotta live by that door, brother.
He goes on the show, and I don't know if you've seen the episode. But Jesse Lee Peterson is being kind of a dick to Ben or whatever. And Ben, he's just not ready for it. Right. Mm-hmm. And Jesse Lee Peterson says something to Ben. He says, you like Bernie Sanders and you don't want people to be wealthy. Like, you don't want black people to be wealthy like Bernie Sanders. You're not teaching them to be wealthy. And Ben was trying to explain that Bernie Sanders wasn't always wealthy. But he's taking too long to explain it, so Jesse Lee Peterson just goes, beta! You're beta male! Beta! He just starts ripping into him, calling him a beta male. And every time Ben tries to explain anything, Jesse Lee goes, beta!
Oh my God.
And so I fucked with Ben. I told him, I said, look, if you ever get in a situation like that again, if you go back on the show and someone starts calling you names like that, you pause them and you say, you got one more time to call me a beta male. Because the next one, I'm coming through the screen and I'm going to slap the fire out of your ass.
We coming for you, nigga.
Ben should have just hit him, honestly. Like, I've shook Ben's hand. Like, he's a solid dude. Like, he could have gripped up Jesse, put his ass through the drywall.
I mean, he's a bear. He's a bear, that one.
Yeah, Jesse Lee Peterson asked him, Ben Burgess, where does logic come from?
I actually asked you about him, Jason. I'm pretty sure. Like, I got a random message from the dude who produces his show, and you know, I didn't know the landscape of like left podcasting or anything like that. I'm pretty sure you're who I messaged where I was like, yo, is this a career killer? Is this?
When did you remember what I said?
I think you sent me like a link. You were like, even, I mean, you were in classic Jason fashion where you were just like giving me bad advice. You're like, it'd be hilarious if you did it. But I always push past that to like, is it hilarious in like a, it's intelligent way, or you just want to sit there laughing your ass off?
Oh, I want to last my dude. That I wish that nigga would call me.
Jason.
I wish. Oh, I wish tonight. I wish that nigga would want to fight. I wish he would call me. There will be one beta. Can only be in person. I think he's in LA. We'll only do it in person, Jesse.
He's in person.
You're not, gonna yell at me over a fucking screen. Think I'm fucking high?
One thing, I mean, just throw, and I've seen it in the comments and stuff like that, but it is interesting to think. I was too young at the time, like maybe because I wasn't reading how other people were responding to Boondocks. Like the response to Boondocks was me talking to my friends or going to school or, you know, dad barbershop. And we all liked it, but two babies had all your money. Does the loser lose the fedora or get to keep it? Like,
nice.
Good question. But the show does these things that were very celebrated when other shows do it, like in a certain, like, you know, Gin Rummy and the race swapping with Ed Wunsler and Gin Rummy. That becomes this thing that's a very big deal when, you know, say in Atlanta, when there's some race swapping and like, what are we getting across with these two dudes? They affect a gangster persona. They basically have a black face or a black voice, but they have, you know, they're these white dudes. And then you think about like Thugnificent. That's when you first hear booty butt cheeks, it just sounds so dumb and so ridiculous. And on the one hand, some people could have come at it as like, oh, this is just reductionist respectability politics coming from Aaron Magruder because he's an educated nigga and he doesn't like all this shit. He wants to hear some, you know, conscious rap. But if you play it next to Sexy Red.
Hey.
Her booty hole was brown, Bertram.
Hey,
my God, it was brown. I may not get there with you, Bertram. Because she was eating my ass. Eating my ass.
With jelly.
Oh, but I'm looking away at where my career is going. I'm just waving it goodbye.
But, you know, at the time, I didn't get to see, like, whether people thought these were as impressive. Or Uncle Ruckus. I mean, Samuel Jackson's role in Django, that is an Uncle Ruckus. That is
this
embodiment of the person, you know, or going back to the Malcolm X speech of, oh, is we sick, boss? How we feeling today? It does all these things that other shows coming after that 2014 point seem to get like celebrated for.
I want to answer your question, but people in the chat right now are being too fucking hilarious.
Yeah. I get it. I dig it. Jelly, man, jelly like a lamb shank. Goddamn.
Pog Hunter MLK. Oh my god. You want to read that out loud, Tucson?
Jason ain't a beta male, he's a pi male. Google it.
I hope that's a good thing.
3.14 male.
I don't know this shit. This Dungeons and Dragons approach to masculinity is it's just fucking silly. Quote me.
Oh, shit. Like a Sigma.
What'd you say, Tucson?
Spoken like a Sigma.
Jesus.
Can you repeat your question, Bert? I'm not looking at the screen. I'm looking at the camera, which is looking at you. I need you to repeat your question.
My question is just like, did you experience, I mean, were you looking at Boondocks? Well, you said you came to it. No, you were watching it as it was happening, but
yeah.
Were you still tapped into all the different pop cultural discourses that you are now and seeing it get the sort of at least intrigue for the race swapping and what does that mean, or this Uncle Ruckus character, or just in its, you know, prescience? You know, we already mentioned the thing where like the black, you know, evil television, well, that dude is a billionaire and, you know, like Trump. And then it sounds reductive to say that some songs are coming out with shit just like booty butt cheeks. But I mean, Sexy Red is literally coming out with shit that's just the color of holes on her fucking body, which I would still listen to.
We talk about that on the show. A friend of mine said that when we were at a video shoot and I lived at the warehouse for a rapper called Filthy Rich. And he said that rap today sounds like a Living Color skit in 1992. And I think me and Tucson were talking about this the other day because we were trying to do an episode and it just didn't work out for Saturday, which didn't work out, about women in hip hop. And one of the things I wanted to talk about, and I think Tucson wanted to hit on it too, was that by the time you get to, for a lot of people, Nicki Minaj, you've said it all. And I just watched, as I was telling you earlier today, Teray told me to watch this. And I want to preface all the horrible pop culture shit I watched by Teray told me to watch this. Was the Megan Thee Stallion, Tory Lanez stuff. And again, this is, I am so old and out of the loop. I don't really know who either of these people are. I kind of know what a Megan Thee Stallion is.
How dare you?
I'm not really into her catalog, right? And there was a sad story to me. The poor woman got shot on some silly shit. I thought that was horrible. I didn't know anything about it. But there is this way that rap has just, there's always a derivative of something, right? And these earlier women were kind of go-getters in their sexual exploits. It was a means to an end. And then Cardi B caught heat, who's also a derivative of Nicki Minaj, right? And she caught heat for saying that at one point in her life she was drugging dudes and taking their wallets. And you're like, why is that shocking to you? And why do you want to get mad at her for that? A, she's a fucking rapper. B, she kind of talks about shit like that. And C, she's a fucking rapper. I mean,
King Von's best songs are literally just recitations of robberies.
That's again, like, why do we get mad when rappers do rapper shit? I listen to heavy metal. If I see some dude that's, oh, you actually worship the devil. Okay, that goes with all the pentagrams and shit. All right, works it. Thanks. I don't get mad about it or get shocked. But now the derivative is we're not even doing this as a means to an end. It's just what we do. So by the time you get to Sexy Red and Assy Lady, I don't know her name. Assy Lady.
Sukiyana.
What is her name?
Sukiyana.
Is that her Christian name or her rap name?
I don't think Christ claims her, but it could be a Christian name.
In my church, I was told Jesus loves all the little children. Even the ones with fucked up names.
And then they asked for the fucking handout.
Right. But these aren't like the, like, listen to, and I'm not saying one's better than the other. It's just a derivative, and it's the derivative is always going to be just way worse. So now, like you said, Bert, it's just booty butt cheeks. That's the song, remember?
Yeah. And they actually say it two different ways because it was just a dumb song. So he didn't realize he was singing it. The co-creator didn't realize he was singing it the wrong way the first time.
It's all the songs on the show are fucking hilarious. And I think they're too wordy for the stuff that we get now. Like, they couldn't see mumble rap. But I do think they talk about that era of hip hop pretty well. Even to the point of people going broke, because Thugnificent ends up losing everything and becomes a UPS man.
And ruins the job for his boy. Just saying shit like in the interview, of course, as soon as I'm on, he's on. We're both back on top. Both.
You know, they even kind of joke about the life cycle of a rapper, because this show also comes out around the time that Drake is coming out, and they can't foresee that Drake and Kanye West are going to be massive stars 20 years later almost, because no one's done that. So to do the show where the Thugnificent character is, I think it's like 2 weeks later on the show, where he's already losing money, and there's a younger rapper that's got a dance.
Yeah, basing off Soulja Boy.
That's Soulja Boy. Yeah, it's the same thing. And he's like, well, I got to get a dance. And
that was, who was that live clip of? Was that Soulja Boy and Ice-T who had a thing? Or was it Soulja Boy and Snoop Dogg? Because they recreate.
Right.
The altercation.
I don't know. But, you know, that became a thing where he was fighting to stay relevant. And what I found was the funniest fight that he had to stay relevant was when Obama gets elected and he does the Dick Riding Obama song. And Magruder, let's remember, has no critique of Barack Obama. His critique is of the moment, not of the man.
Sure.
And we have to remember that. Let's stop acting like this Negro was sitting there reading Adolf Reed. It's like 8 cats read that book.
I would have loved to have been number 9, but it wasn't on like the syllabus.
That's where the Obama stuff was really interesting when you rewatch it, because the critique is of the hysteria. And that's where his skepticism comes into play. And I think that also speaks to Magruder's politics.
Also, just, you know, speaking to that moment, you know, the media was skeptical of Obama. Like, 60 Minutes does an actual spot with Obama where they drive him around and they, you know, they're intercutting it with, I don't know, the host of 60 Minutes, but you can still find on YouTube. He just asked,
what'd you say? There's several hosts. It was designed as a new show where the protagonist of the show were going to be 4 journalists.
I'm so glad I'm not on a sitcom where you're narrating my life. bum ass Wonder Years shit. Yeah, so the anchor just asked Obama straight up, like, do you think people in black communities will actually support you with you being, you know, an immigrant and all that, and you didn't really grow up there and you're an Ivy League school? And the retort, which is partially done in imagery, is like Obama just saying, like, you know, when I'm at the barbershop or I'm playing basketball, no one really asks me those questions. And then they make sure to intercut it with like images of him driving through Southside Chicago. And then a little bit later, Michelle, you know, has her cameo where she gets to be asked about, are you ever worried about Barack being assassinated? And she's just like, as a black man, you know, Barack could get shot any day. So the response to this explicit question of like, you know, you're not really from these communities. You're very educated. You didn't come up the way that, you know, past black leaders did, where, you know, they have to become basically a fixture in one community, move up the ranks. I'm not saying that that's an honest system. There's a lot of politicking that happens with that. But that's the way the process was, whereas he's just kind of like here, and he's not really representative of how a lot of black Americans thought of themselves. They just asked him that directly, and the response was like, I go to barbershops like you do. I play basketball, and sometimes you try to shoot me. I mean, I'm as black as it gets, my guy.
I don't think he added that there. People try to shoot me. I'm as black as it gets. I do all the things you people do. I like basketball. Look at my black ass wife. You think these little Negro children have good hair like this? Oh, no. Oh, no. Wait, two, use a hot comb. Melania, show them those burns on the back of your neck.
Nice.
Boondocks, yeah. If they were still on, they heard your voice stylings. Like, I think you'd have a position there, bro.
I would love to not have my face shown.
We can't all be like Toussaint. Only some of us get that privilege.
I had like 40 episodes of that, and then I went down a dark, dark route. Someone says that Werner Herzog was critiquing Obama. He was not. He was critiquing the moment. He was critiquing Huey Freeman. There's more jokes he makes about Huey Freeman being depressing than about Barack Obama. This was before he got elected. I don't remember if he had got elected at the time. Because they do have a show. They have an episode. They have a couple Obama episodes.
They start in 2005, so he would have been there for, you know, essentially the entire moment. One and a half seasons, you know, before the fourth one was, you know, Obama's first term.
Right. That's the third season show where Thugnificent is wearing skinny jeans and his pants rip in the nut ride in Obama when he wins. When he wins the I'm sorry?
Of course, that's the part you remember.
It is the part I remember, and I'm mad at you for trying to call me out. You're just mad because I fit into these pants, Toussaint. I fit into them. These are ones that, look, starving myself worked.
By a hair.
Haven't eaten in a week.
I've been with you at Denny's, bro. Also, I don't even care about the continuity of this show or the flow of conversation. I'm going to go back to the female rappers and just say, that shit was so soft serve compared to what you be texting me. He will just find the most, like, if anyone in a hood, anywhere in America, shit, anywhere in the world, films a rap video with, like, their phone and they try to sell sex, Jason knows about it and he sends the shit to me and he's like, so this is what you all are into now?
this is the culture?
Sometimes he gets hostile as fuck. He'll just send me some girl talking about, like, I don't know, like, fucking while she's still pregnant and her other friends, like, snorting Percocets. And all Jason will put is, explain this to me. Like, I directed the motherfucker. And then on this show, he's a fucking diplomat when it comes to so diplomatic.
There is a video. I don't know where I lost it. I sent it to, and the list, first of all, everyone, this wonderful young man that is like a little brother to me is not lying. There's not one lie that he told. There was a video that I found, and it made the booty hole woman and which I still think is the greatest posse cut of 2023, which is the booty hole and wanting to suck off Joe Biden song in front of the Burger King. Like, nothing can top that. But these young ladies tried. And I think one is pregnant with a baby in a liquor store. And what was she rapping about? Was she rapping about getting an abortion?
Doing it again? At that point, she was rapping, like, the friends, it's switching. They're doing that thing where, like, each person's got a verse. I don't think the pregnant woman was talking about this, but the other one was talking about, like, I think having either a Percocet crushed and shot up her ass or railed out of it.
Yeah, she was talking. It was something about, yeah, shoving drugs up her ass. ass, like, you know, snorting it or shooting it, just pop it up the old hooter. And
the old hooter.
And I was like, because Bert will defend shitty music. And I'm like, hey, man, this sucks. Someone says they need to get Jason a relationship with one of these rappers. That would be the greatest, funniest thing in the world. I would totally.
Let's go with Lotto.
I was asking Toussaint earlier today, and you're getting called out on this, Toussaint. You're getting called out. Bert, she did this to me. We were having a conversation earlier today because I was having like this deep conversation about what was going on, what I was watching going on with the Tory Lanez and Megan Thee Stallion thing. And because I thought it was kind of fucked up the way she was portrayed. And there's a whole history of the way women do get portrayed in a lot of these trials. And I said, jokingly, but kind of serious, I was like, Megan Thee Stallion is single now, huh? I was like, you think I got a shot? And Toussaint was like, no.
Fuck no, she's 5'11".
She's 5'11".
That nigga was three apples high.
He was.
How many mistakes you think she's got in the chamber?
That's true. She's never going to do that again.
The last time she dated someone short, he shot her in the foot.
Must be this tall to ride this ride.
This is a side. Somebody mentioned it, but yes, Tara Whack is white people music and also HBCU music.
I can't believe you just said that. That he shot her in the foot because he was too short.
It's either that or just the hairline just filled with rage. Like, apparently, he's got some songs I enjoy.
Apparently, per the DA, she was shitting on him in the car. Clowning his lack of a career and his lack of wealth compared to hers, and that set him off.
I don't know why people say that. Would you say that Tory Lanez has a lack of a career?
I don't know Tory Lanez.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, now he does. Now he's got a serious lack of a career. But at the time, nah, he was dropping a ton of singles, and he had music videos coming out left and right.
Right.
Someone said, did you see the clip of his father at the courthouse? Oh, yes, I did.
That was
what that looked like.
His father looks like future him.
Mm-hmm.
And his father was like, I've never seen a travesty of justice to this level. I was like, word? I was like, never?
Nope.
I know you guys are from Canada and all, but really? That's interesting.
I would love on some South Park shit that just because he's in Canada, he's never seen anything like that. It's just too good up there.
Like that was my first thing, was like, oh, maybe it's because you're like, no, I just, and I get it, man. You're seeing your son get taken away in handcuffs, you know, and me and Bert had a real, Bert went in. I would love to play what he said. I'm not going to play what he said. But
hey, are you recording me?
I mean, you sent me recorded messages. I said, I'm not going to play what you said.
This nigga going to break the sacred bond of an.
I said, I'm not going to do it. Why would I do that? It's like you said something fucked up. Like, hey, hey. Bitch, that's what she deserved. That's what she get for being tall. Like, you didn't say anything fucked up.
She get for being tall.
there's a lifestyle to this shit. And that documentary I thought was horrible in the way that things were framed.
Yeah.
We're an hour and a half in on this show. We don't really need to get into it. That's a whole nother show. That could be part of the Women in Hip Hop show that we're still going to do. But
I love this no name debate for all the folks doing that. I appreciate you.
No name? You like no name?
No, but I appreciate the debate.
No. No, I'm fine with it.
I'm not the arbiter of who is and isn't like white people rap, but I will say that she's, you know, her dad probably owns an Afrocentric bookstore.
Damn.
Which just means that me and her are different sorts of, we'd be different characters in Boondocks. That's what this show is about.
Wow. Yeah, I've never really heard her music. Is it any good?
I only heard the clap back to J. Cole, and then I heard his kind of weak response. I mean, I felt like, I don't know. His
clap response back to J. Cole. She had beef with J. Cole.
He got all sensitive. I'm pretty sure if I'm thinking of the right person, it's called Snow on the Bluff is J. Cole's response. But basically, she came at, you know, just the idea of the black male rappers who are right skirting this like line of conscious black guy, but they don't, they're not super involved in the community. They're not at that level. They just say the right words. And he responded as if she was talking to him. And so he did this whole, to me, kind of like weak sauce response about how she should have criticized him and how she should be more thoughtful, you know, about all the black people who don't have the benefit of the sort of education and books that she's had and, you know, find a way to educate. But I mean, he might as well just said, could you have criticized me, but smiled? Could you have been nicer about it?
Right.
Someone said, I've only been scolded by people that have no name singles on vinyl. I think that's kind of what we started the show off talking about, how there's kind of a whole genre of media that is black, but is it like, who is it for? I don't know. I can't answer that question.
It's for me. Not.
It's sure. Because I don't want to hear about your Percocet habit and where you're putting them and what color your holes are.
I mean, you know what you're doing. You're just like, who could possibly be bothered to spend 30 minutes to an hour imagining what have motivated this person and what they could be getting out of it? Let me fuck up Bertrand's morning.
What's really, what people don't know, like, you're writing a book right now. Like, you have like an important thing that you have to do.
Unfortunately, I am obsessive. And like, if somebody poses a question to me, it's like, well, let me think about that shit. Like, what are they, you know, what are they getting out of this? What sort of, and we end up in these places referencing all sorts of fucking psychology and shit like that. Like, why would you make money off something so kind of dark and dismal for your life? And like, we get into it. And then the morning shot, my writing looks like shit, and I hope for another day.
Thanks, Bert. Thanks, it's good, Jason, to know that I am the reason why you were not getting an advance.
Yep. If any of your listeners have been waiting, like, this thing has been tweeting about having a book for like 2 years. Look right there. That's the reason.
And you see, I'm trying to pull him away from writing again to come hang with me Wednesday. It's not like we hang for 5 minutes and he goes home.
Nah, man, I'm a spoiled baby. Like, I can only write first thing in like the morning. At this point in the evening, I'm just like, let me watch TV.
Someone said, no one's audience is wider than Death Grips.
Damn.
I don't know death. What is Death Grips?
Wow. There you go.
I don't know Death Grips.
I only know them because it's the dudes from Hella. What, I think it's the drummer from Hella, who was also in Team Sleep with Chino from the Deftones, and this black dude from Sacramento, and they make this interesting style of hip hop.
Had I not evolved, I would be using some of Riley's Mad Libs right now.
I thought for a second, I didn't realize that was a water thing. I thought that was a big ass Cole 45.
Wow. Can you even get one of those in your neighborhood?
In his neighborhood? Mine,
absolutely not.
In Silver Lake? That's all the rave with all them white people in Silver Lake.
Says the guy dressed like the fucking mascot of Silver Lake. You look like the first nigga they let in there, bro. They probably gave you that fedora. They're like, listen, without it, you're a bit too intimidating. But you put this shit on, island vibes.
Island vibes?
They say jazz vibes. Oh my
Jason
god.
Jason looked like Lou Baker.
Oh
Bravo number five.
This is, first of all, that was funny. That was really funny. But no, I don't live in Silver Lake.
Somebody mentioned that I was put right back to being 14. I just want to say, like, you're not wrong, because Jason is one of the few dudes that that appreciates that style of humor that I still have hanging around. Everybody else has read too many fucking books.
Do you see this comment on the screen, Toussaint?
The top one.
Jason looks like the sketch of a guy they tell to stay away from vacation. Wait, what?
They tell kids to stay away from on vacation.
Oh, wow.
So mean. You guys are so mean.
Trying to offer you candy. Don't take it. There's no puppies in the trunk. I repeat, there are no puppies in the trunk. Go look near his car.
Why are you guys so mean? For the audio listeners, I'm wearing a Star Wars button up.
I couldn't make out what it was.
Mm-hmm. Someone says Jason is a black Redditor.
Jason looks like the black Russell Brand.
That is funny.
What possessed this nigga to put on, to put this shirt on and throw on that tiny hat?
Oh my gosh.
So for those that don't know, we are over an hour, and this is all what the champagne room is like. And this is all free champagne on the house here at TIR. This is a free champagne night. That was fucking hilarious. The Russell Brand shit was pretty funny. I mean,
the door does look like it came from a police sketch. Jesus.
Prairie Fire says Uncle Ruckus would not trust Jason. Jason looks like he came in on the wind rush.
He does, actually.
That's the look I was going for, dude. 40s island black person fucking stuck in the UK.
That's hilarious.
Nailed it. Jason's been reading too much Hunter S. This is funny.
I'm glad I could start this round of dozens, you know.
Jason pulled up on a banana boat.
Damn. Oh my God. He's good as hell at dominoes.
Jason worked with Bumpy Jones. Dr. Claus said all Jason is missing is a Porsche Boxster.
It's just kind of bananas. Just a bunch of bananas roped together.
It said Jason's got a tiny coffee cup off screen. Oh my God. It would have been worse if I would have had my glasses on. So I'm glad.
And you feel like you can walk up to Megan Thee Stallion in that ensemble.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you would have saw the outfit I had on when I went to go see my buddy Chris Rigg, what happened to Burt's?
You know,
what in the name of Walmart computers happened to your screen?
Don't worry, it's gonna be fixed. She'll do him on the spot. Like
he migrated from the south,
looking for opportunities.
Ha 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 ha!
He studied.
Oh my god, I'm just crying so hard right now. This is the funniest shit I've ever heard.
Jason,
you know why it's funny? Because it's people, it's black people from like 12 different regions of the United States.
That's true.
And this, my friend, is what black unity looks like. We've been liberated.
Time to throw on some sexy red and eat a Luther.
That's right.
When the Martin Luther King character talks about the boneless rib sandwich, I fucking fell out.
For a limited time only.
Dr. Claus says he listened to an old podcast with Chris Riggins on it. Yeah, Chris Riggins had a show on here where he would bring comedians on. That was fun. He was actually at my house, and he left my house to go do a series of arenas with Dave Chappelle. So I think he's back in L.A.
To the commenter on my my vitiligo, I got all jealous of Jason's fucking setup, and I was like, all right, let me hook up the webcam and do all this shit and actually have like some fucking pixels, like I give a shit. And I fucked it up, so now I'm back to just a regular laptop webcam.
That shit. You had some error message on the screen that looked like, oh man, what kind of bootleg Chinatown shit did Bert have?
Nah, I just it don't know. Just like an 80 club bullshit.
They said Jason got that shirt from Cuba from the Death Star gift shop. You know, I'm glad I don't care what I wear, because no one can be as mean as Toussaint is to me.
Me?
Toussaint was telling me all the black women I'm not allowed to date. I was like, I can't get with Megan Thee Stallion. She goes, no. Just the way she said it, she's like, no, no, not at all. And then who else did I name that you said was a no for me too?
Oh, I don't know. Who did you name? I don't remember.
I remember I asked you about Kim Kardashian. Isn't Kim Kardashian single? You're like, oh no.
Oh no.
Oh
no.
She already did one funny dude, man. You're out. No chance.
She's already had a regular guy?
She already had a funny dude.
Who?
Pete Davidson.
He's not that funny.
He's not.
He's really not that funny. Sorry, Pete Davidson. I'm sure you're not watching this show, but you're not that funny. You know you're not that funny.
That's as regular as it gets for her.
You really think she can't just lower her standards just a little bit?
No.
Wow.
Love that you think you're just a little bit of a lower standard.
That's right.
Like, you might not think he's funny, but like, guy making movies, getting shows, fucking green light left and fucking right. And you're like, and I'm right under that shit. Like, I'm right. If she would just give me the time of day.
Who? I think I want to be part of a celebrity power couple.
A disparate power couple.
A lopsided power couple.
You think it's lopsided if me and Megan Thee Stallion are together as a mighty force?
You're the new version of, like, whatever the fuck Oprah's husband's name is. Stedman.
Stedman. Stedman.
You'd be Stedman.
Stedman did not have a successful podcast.
Stedman was a doctor.
Was he?
He was with Oprah. Mm. So it didn't count.
Maybe Stedman is a little better than me.
Maybe.
If you had been there, maybe to like take that bullet from Megan, I think you would have had a chance to pull the bullet out of her foot.
Take the bullet out of her foot. Like a snake bite. He's just going to suck the bullet out of her foot.
Suck you just suck that boy. Shit right out. And then you move down to a toe.
You know, Megan Thee Stallion just may be in Pomona randomly while I'm speaking there, and we meet at a Starbucks or something corny like that.
And for some reason, she's crouching down and gets hit in the fucking door, and she's like, what is this? the man I've been waiting for.
Why is she the Jolly Green Giant?
She's 5'11". She would dunk on you, bro.
I'm 5'10".
Since when?
Since your mama said so, nigga.
How many Vans you wearing that day?
Stacking up Vans. Stacking up
Vans. Making platform shoes. Got lifts in the Vans. My shoes are a little flatter, I understand.
Listen, yeah. I say it out of my own bitter place. I'm 5'9". I got no shot.
Look, you know what? You better hope me and Megan Thee Stallion are never in the same eatery at the same time.
You won't be.
Wow. Because she don't go to fucking Denny's.
No, she doesn't. And you love Denny's. I don't know why.
I feel like there's a Denny's somewhere in Southern California that Megan Thee Stallion goes to. I'm going to find that Denny's.
I think you're better off at Roscoe's.
No, I think she's at a Denny's.
She actually doesn't go to Denny's.
I think you're wrong. I think I'm going to randomly run into Megan Thee Stallion.
I don't know.
Randomly run into other black actresses in LA at some random places. Okay.
No.
What?
No.
I think you may still have a shot with Sexy Red.
Mm. I think she's like in her early 20s. This is way too young. It's a child.
And yet you want to be introduced to strippers.
There's some grown ones in there.
There is one per club, and she is living that Gollum lifestyle.
Gollum?
Jesus. Gollum lifestyle.
They come out of the dark. They just lurk. They put their long hands on your shoulder, and they just...
That's the woman I'm looking for. What's the line Grandpa says in that first episode? I'll find me a white woman with a flat booty that will listen to all my problems.
It's an accurate sense. I've heard niggas say that shit. Like, almost verbatim. I'm not even going to get into it.
This is usually behind all you're hearing right now, everyone, is usually behind the patron paywall, and we're trying to get the show canceled just for you. So if you're enjoying what you hear and you want us to stay on just a little bit longer and you would like to see what goes on in the champagne room, last night was another very, very fun episode. You can get access to all the episodes, past and present, for as little as $3 a month or $30 for the year. It can all be yours. Now, back to talking about Bertram's punk-ass mama. Hey.
Don't forget to hit like. My shit's mostly been at the bodega persuasion.
Oh, my God. Taco money for Jason. Thank you, Josh.
$2 taco money for Jason. How many tacos will that get you down there?
I'm not telling you.
Oh, shit.
You gotta come down here. You gotta come visit.
I really, you know. Honestly, they don't have to be from the hood to be brown. I don't know if you know that.
Someone said that Bert doesn't know what to do with a brown booty hole.
And I'm just spreading cultural awareness. A lot of them are brown, but that's why some go and get bleached.
Wow.
It ain't black women doing that. Come on.
Has all the ass eating started a butthole bleaching craze in the black community, Tucson?
I'm going to go with no on that one.
That's not the scuttlebutt in your nail salon?
The scuttlebutt? Miriam fucking Webster over here in the fedora. Listen, I'm not changing my temperature settings for all you people in the comments, all right? You get two-toned me.
Ah! Someone made a comment about me and Lauren Boebert. We, you know, again, if you'd like to hear all of the Lauren Boebert comments last
night. Yeah, we did discuss all of that, right?
I said things that I shall not repeat on this show about Lauren Boebert, women with rough hands. And I'll leave it at that.
Apparently white Bert's mean.
White Bert's mean.
Steve says that's Jason's type of woman. It depends on the mood. I also said what my type of woman was on the show. Do you remember that type, Toussaint?
Type of woman who uses the word scuttlebutt. That was a type of person.
I imagine her name's something like Reagan.
As a kid named Caden.
Caden.
If you're a white Jayden. Woman with a kid named Caden. Or Reagan, or Jackson, but it's spelled weird. I'm definitely running away from you.
Jackson.
As pure as the Irish blood charging through my veins.
Someone says Jason looks like he's on Russell Brand's legal team.
I feel like that's probably somebody who got like a law degree, but from like Florida. Like,
but from like Florida.
Apparently, somebody just called out your woman,
Brianna Joy. She never calls me back, man.
You were too mean on air.
No, she was too mean in real life. This is on the free show. I need to shut up because I don't want to get a message from Brianna Joy Gray or find out like she just did a whole episode of why I am Russell Brand or some shit like that.
I mean, you definitely enabled him, but we all know that. Like, I don't know if your followers knew that.
I don't even like the guy.
Which makes the enabling so fucking strange.
Oh my God. You know what's so funny? I got a message about him from someone in that camp. And I'll read it to you guys off air. No, I won't. But yeah. Yeah, I don't really have anything. I never liked Russell Brand. Never really got him.
It's just, yeah. I mean, I feel like he was almost a precursor to that Jordan Peterson style speech where it's just like many fucking words in a stream of consciousness that somehow gets loosely summarized at the end. And people are like, that was fucking profound.
Fuck yeah. Steve says a nigga ain't fun. I never got dude. I thought it was kind of funny in that movie.
Forgetting Sarah Marshall or Get Him to the Greek.
Yeah, a friend of mine was in that movie. She was Puffy's wife.
You go to high school together?
No, she actually she dated my friend from high school.
From high school. The fame school. The real fame school.
I don't like Russell Brand, but everyone deserves a competent defense. Jason Miles.
Damn.
Yo, you're about to blow up in the manosphere once people are here.
That would suck because I'd blow up for a day and then they actually hear me talking. They're like, you actually like women? I'm like, yeah, they're cool.
Yeah, they're cool.
They're really nice. They're nice people.
Nifty.
I'm friends with my ex-wife. This is great.
Y'all don't hang out, though.
No, this is a recent thing. We've finally become adults.
Nice.
It happens.
Not
the manosphere to me is a bunch of dudes that refuse to grow up. Like I heard a conversation today, because I get a lot of that stuff too. When you're looking for shit videos, the stuff that starts to come up, man, it's insane. But there was a clip where this dude was talking about red flags for women, and he was saying a red flag for him is women that are friends with their exes.
Ooh.
And he was young. And when I was young, I used to feel insecure like that and say stupid shit like that when I was really young. And he was like, oh, and they're friends with their exes. And I'm like, just block his number. And they're like, I can't block his number because we're still friends. And then he says that he looks at the girl's phone and he says the dude is flirting. And I was like, man, you sound like a nightmare, dude. Like, why are you?
Whenever I hear like some of the younger rappers who are like 22, 23, 24 say some like shit like that, even if it seems only slightly paranoid, I'm like, well, I'm about 3 years from hearing his domestic abuse story. Like Central C is blowing up and every other lyric in a few songs, it's like, oh, that's that hyper possessive shit. Like, this career ain't gonna last.
You won't be around next year. The manosphere kick a new flavor in here. There's always someone in the manosphere that will out manosphere the guy before them. Like, who's gonna out Andrew Tate?
If you get on there and you say, actually, there are no real women, they're all robots. Like,
that's not the next phase.
Like, birds. They're all NPCs.
Just curly things.
Steve says we need a 90-day moratorium on niggas buying podcast equipment. Oh, God. Steve and Guitar Center would go out of business. The model has changed, my man. Oh, has it changed? Toussaint?
Curly Things is out Andrew Tate. And she won't get arrested.
Yeah. Yeah. There's a young black woman. I don't know where she's from. She is one of the funniest things I've ever seen on the fucking internet. She does these impersonations of a manosphere podcast. I think I've sent them to you, Bert, haven't I?
We've sent them to each other. Musings of Crouton. She's fucking hilarious.
Is that her name? God.
I was going to send her to you. I was like, Jason is going to love this girl.
Oh, my God.
Me and Jason have been sending her back and forth for a while. Like, I dig her shit, man.
She's smart and so funny. So funny. I would love to see her get out of the, you know, front facing camera videos and actually put a bit together and see if she could actually get on stage.
Speaking of your fractured environment thing, like, I feel like in a less fractured environment, she'd have already gotten that Eric Andre opportunity, like something really small on one of those networks.
Yeah. Like Eric, that's who she kind of reminds me of, a more sane, slightly more sane. Eric Andre's insane. I would be terrified to hang out with Eric Andre.
Yeah, but he got to be with Amber Rose. What have you done?
Does that mean these niggas not scary?
Just saying.
You're backing up my point with that comment. Like, fuck it. I don't want to hang with that chick. She seems like a fucking nightmare.
Is it the forehead tattoo?
Everything. Like, who the fuck gets a forehead tattoo that isn't in prison and trying to say something with that forehead tattoo? Like, I'm never leaving here. This tattoo says, I'm never leaving here, and I'm just here to murder people until I probably grow out of it and have regret and then write some sort of book about it.
That and, like, just your ordinary nanny in L.A. or your hometown of Silver Lake.
your nanny has a forehead tattoo?
I said just an ordinary nanny out here.
Not your nanny.
I don't have kids, bro.
You can lie on that show if you want to.
Think I'm just hiring nannies to see what it would fucking be like?
Nah. You got money.
That's that LA shit when you get a book deal.
It comes with a
nanny. Oh, because books are flying off the shelf. I'm going to be getting fuck you money off this book deal. I'll be like, Jason, the Denny's is on me. Yeah, bring Ben.
He will love you for life. He will love you for life if you ever say that.
Do they have Denny's?
You got a book deal, Denny's is on me. Can that be the way we know that everything is cemented and ready to go, that you call me up and you're like, Jay, just get Pascal to host the show. We're going to Denny's.
Nah, nigga, we're going to Pioneer Chicken to fulfill your dream.
Ooh, my fucking chicken fantasy.
That could have been a Boondocks episode title.
That's like when Ruckus went to White Heaven. That's what it's going to be like when I go to Pioneer Chicken. Are you guys reading the comments?
I am reading the comments.
You can't read the comments.
Hi.
It's bad for your health.
Apparently, Yahweh thought it funnier to just make me Cassandra myself for over a decade, watching people continue to, e.g., think that gods control things. I missed.
Yeah, sometimes you can't read the comments.
Sometimes you can't. Sometimes it's funny.
Well, in the champagne room, we know it's like a community. That's another good thing about Patreon that Kuba used to remind me of. He's like, this is a community that you're building, and it's a really cool place to be. So these little things we do in here are a lot of fun. Like, that's where the live shows are a lot of fun.
I like that these people think my book deal has gone well enough. I'm going to have a white baby mama.
Worked for Drake.
Is that what success looks like?
Go to Disney World. Most biracial children you've ever seen, because it's an expensive vacation.
Really? Success is a white baby mama?
I wouldn't call it success. I would just say that seems to be what people try to cop.
I was going to say, I guess you guys ain't never been to certain parts of the South. Just looks like the diversity of poverty.
Like that one lady at the, I mean, she was clearly employed, but that one lady who had the A cup bob dancing by herself, that clip that you like.
That lady. I can still see her dancing. Just in.
You're Aphrodite.
Tell her all your problems.
Well, that was the thing. She didn't have a flat butt.
She didn't. Pascal was suspicious, but she didn't.
Pascal would have wiped that woman up on the spot. Pascal would have been singing every Blackstreet song to that woman.
Blackstreet.
The reason I prefer to think of him hitting like a Frankie Lyman note, just... God. With Jason in the back, same hat, but just going doom up, doom up, doom.
You didn't know Pascal sings Drew Hill songs to all his chicks.
God. I can attest that white people love methamphetamine. I can also attest to that.
I don't even know where this conversation is going.
It's appropriate.
JB said Parasol Pascal. I do declare that is no diggity.
God.
Dude, can you imagine Pascal in a white suit walking up to that white
woman? It's a 3-6 Mafia.
You said Pascal sings 3-6 Mafia?
She was dancing the 3-6 Mafia.
Oh, she was dancing the 3-6 Mafia. Pascal was singing like loose ends to her.
I do indeed have to bag it up.
Once again, everybody, this is the kind of entertainment you get in the champagne room, where there's a community vibe and we all talk shit about each other.
Community.
Oh, this is
community vibe.
Dude, this is hilarious. But again, it's funny here. You don't want people to like run up to you on the street and be like, Jason, Russell Brand looking ass nigga.
It worked for Eddie Murphy. He had a whole bit about him, yeah. Eddie. I don't want to. You're the fuck you, man, right?
Wasn't that what Dave Chappelle said, that somebody walked up to him and his kids and was like, fuck your couch, nigga, in front of his wife and his children? Like, that is not what I want.
That's hilarious, though.
And they would have had to find him in Ohio, which just makes it funnier to me.
Yeah, Vulcan Blackfire says, Jason, I'm coming for you. Yeah, that's like the last thing you want. You're like hanging out on a date and someone's like, we're coming for you, nigga. And I'm like, oh, honey, I have a show. Sorry. It's a thing I do.
Then that date with Megan Thee Stallion is all
fucking the date with me. You look, don't you underestimate my ability to possibly on accident, maybe on purpose, getting the same. This sounds like a stalker now. To be Megan.
You got a nigger?
Fourth, and it says, who's flying to Mexico to stalk Jason? I leave the country. Duh. But I do love living here. No one knows who the fuck I am. They think it's funny that I do something on YouTube. I think some of these people think I'm Jamie Foxx.
They do not.
Dear.
Would you say he has hair? Is that what you said?
Well, he does. I just said, oh, dear.
God, horrible people.
Pascal's taking Drake's wife. Well, baby mama. Sorry, not a wife.
What's a celebrity that Pascal would get with? I feel like he would have went hard over Kirstie Alley. Like he's still upset about missing that moment.
Oh God. That was a moment.
I mean, she's no longer here.
Fair.
Who do you think, Toussaint?
The lady, the main lady from Grey's Anatomy. She likes black guys.
The tall one?
The main one.
What's her name?
Meredith. Damn. The show.
Is that an insult?
Pascal would get Heidi from Grey's Anatomy. Can you pull up a picture of Toussaint?
She's the main chick.
I don't know the show. I don't know the show.
Jesus. It's written by a black woman, Jason.
Is it really?
Shonda Rhimes.
That's one of those facts that the niggas throw out in February.
Oh, Lord. It is not.
It's Kwanzaa 365 days.
It's written by a black woman.
Where's your poems?
Where's your poems?
Where's your poems at?
I see your capris, nigga. I don't see your
sandals. Where your capris?
Did you find a picture of her?
You were serious.
I don't know who this woman is.
You're going to move on to the next thing in 2 seconds.
No, I really need to see a picture of this woman from Grey's Anatomy, because that's a really random one to point out. Like, you could have been weird and been like, oh, Rhea Perlman. But no, you're like, oh, no, I think the woman from Grey's Anatomy.
Rhea Perlman. Come on.
That hits hard.
Are you reading some of these comments, bro?
Miami Motel TVs.
It's funny because that is totally the look. The look, I call this look Scarface chic.
the chic part, though.
Scarface chic.
I like how many alter egos and all this other stuff you got. What's it? Everything's a phase. I'm in the neckerchief phase of my life. Mustache phase.
Don't remind him of the neckerchief.
I almost wore it today, but I knew Toussaint would give me too much shit for it.
Because too many patterns.
She's going to be so mad at me.
Too much going on.
Tomorrow. I'm wearing the overalls tomorrow, Toussaint.
Oh, my God.
What kind of overalls? I hope they're like classic red DMX ones from the concert. Just
No. No. Get out of here. They're Dickies denim overalls.
It's the truth.
And we're going no shirt underneath.
No.
We're going
so plantation. You're going to be
showing off like nipple rings? You look like a nipple rings dude. You got both them pierced. It was the 80s. It was a crazy time. You were the only black guy in Portland.
I remember we were doing a show in Portland one day and my ex just went off on the crowd. She's like, oof. This is the woman that Toussaint says Pascal would get with. I'll give you that. She looks like she has a flat butt and she listened to all his problems.
She doesn't usually look like that, but yeah.
Tahir says, Jason gonna be looking like a civil rights youth from SNCC in them overalls.
Looking like he's trying to desegregate a lunch counter.
Okay, see, now people are feeling like you're getting picked on. People are like, fight back, Jason.
First of all, if it's funny, you laugh. Just if it's funny, you laugh. And I talk a lot of shit, first and foremost. Look at Bertram's face. If you hang around me in real life, talk a lot of shit all the time. All the time. To strangers.
At Denny's.
Anybody. Toussaint has been with me in real life. I can be a liability.
I'm sure a lot of your listeners have that uncle, you know, the one who never lets a waitress get away.
Never lets a nurse get away.
It's like if there's any woman in a service job, that's a 45-minute conversation. Hold the segregating schools head ass.
Someone says Jason's wearing capris right now. Kinda. I do have my pants cuffed.
Why?
So you can show my ankles. It was warm today. Oh, I had to tan my ankles.
You lose a lot of heat through your ankles.
It's your Victorian era fashion. Trying to be.
That's part of the mustache phase. The mustache kerchief overalls phase is that you show your ankles.
That makes any sense.
You know what, Toussaint? When you hit your mustache phase, when you get out of your mustache phase.
Nice.
I appreciate people coming at my hairline. They tried to fix it because I was at like an Armenian barbershop. They tried to do my eyebrows too, and I almost freaked out.
Times. Why?
Why what?
We got an Armenian barbershop.
Because that's the one that's close to my house.
And what does that have to do with hair? You've been black for like 50 years. Why are you going to an Armenian?
I'm sorry. Are we black capitalists now? Should I have been putting that money back in the fucking community?
I gotta talk to you like Ice Cube all of a sudden. Yay, yay! Why the hell are you going to Armenian barber?
Because the Armenian will listen to what the fuck I say about how I want my hair done.
It's like a white woman with a flat butt.
Honestly, personally, part of it is I appreciate the language barrier so I can have a quiet fucking haircut.
Wow, you are the meanest dude in the history of mean dudes.
Everybody's not a super extrovert, Jason.
Tucson, how can you not look? I made that mistake one time when I was working in the peninsula. I went to a barbershop that was not a black owned barbershop. And Umar Johnson and Khalid Muhammad was in my ear telling me it's a bad decision. And I shooed him away and went in there and had the most fucked up haircut of my life.
Wow.
Because I wasn't going to get to the black barber in time because of traffic and all the other bullshit. And I couldn't wait till the weekend because we all know how long it takes to get your haircut on the weekends.
All day.
Oh, my God.
Not with the Armenians. I got Armenian dentists, too. They run that shit in family, militant. You're on time. I mean,
this is unacceptable, Bert. There's got to be. You could have drove by any urban high school in America and seen niggas cutting hair in front of the school. They did that at my high school.
Lawn furniture.
Nobody cut hair at your high school?
What?
They wasn't.
I don't live out here. You think I got high school homies out here waiting to cut my fucking hair, roaming through the neighborhood like haircuts?
JB said, when was Jason get his haircut? 1994. Fuck you, nigga. 2003, nigga. There's my tall friends that had me shave my head. Them tall niggas was like, hey, man, that's just getting thin on top.
That's funny.
I tried to get twist. Niggas was like, I don't know what the hell you gonna have that woman twisting.
Damn. We need pictures.
My daughter has all the photo albums, apparently, she told me. So I'm going up north to do something for the book launch, and I think I'm going to see her. And we're gonna go through some of those photo albums. I haven't seen those pictures in decades. But that's mean. Bert, there's enough black barbers that I know one is not that busy that you can go into their barbershop and pay the same amount of money and get a very nice haircut.
Yeah, see, the thing is that I don't want the fucking kinship. I want the customer vibe. I want somebody who's like used to people complaining and like asking for money back, which I'm not going to do, but I want the threat to be there. And the fucking Armenians, they will do it correctly. They just do it. They're living under that.
Wow. You're the only... See, I've been black for 46 years now, and I've never met a person in Southern California that goes to Armenian barber.
I mean, you see all these light-skinned rappers and like the Middle Eastern ones, like Khalid, like they know how to do a fucking tape. Like, it's the same skill, bro.
True. There's Asian ones too.
What magical thing is happening to you over at these black barbershops? That you like, I'm.
The life lessons you get in a black barbershop. It's like you walk life in and a lessons. Hallmark movie happens.
Can't you have you not read my work? Have I not get enough life lessons? Can I not now go to a nice, luxurious Armenian shop?
Bertrand Casper. Dude.
Can't you just watch that LeBron show? In the barbershop.
I used to go to the barbershop that, what was his name? Ken Carter owned. Coach Carter. His barbershop in Richmond, California. That was my barbershop on 23rd Street. 23rd and McDonald, Richmond, California. That barbershop, my God. Oh, my God. The things that you were going to see there in that barbershop any given day.
Okay.
So much fun. You're missing out on all that, Bert.
So much fun.
Are you hanging out with pimps at the Armenian barbershop?
Pimps.
Probably listen, not. Is the Armenian barbershop also a free daycare for wayward youth in the area?
Listen, you come out here and you show me the barbershop I can go to where it's that class of folks and I'm not at risk of getting fucking shot and I'll hop over there. But the black barbershops that are actually safe, it's not going to be Riley's, bro.
Hey, that's what makes the barbershop trip fun.
Not for Nipsey.
Hey. Ooh.
too soon. Oh.
Wasn't that shit like 5 years ago?
You said too soon.
It's bad enough the race reductionists are going to fucking shit all over me. Now I got to worry about Crips getting mad at me because you want to get out of pocket with your insults.
Yeah, I'm sure it's going to be an organized unit. It's going to mobilize and move down to Mexico to target you.
No, just wait till I come to L.A.
You the nigga with a podcast.
No. One chain.
One chain.
What are they going to steal? A shirt?
That shirt. Please.
That's him in a kerchief and overalls.
No. No kerchief and overalls.
I like this person saying nobody can aim in the hood, Bert. Come home. As it, like, I'm not going to trust somebody with an internet connection telling me to come back to the hood. I know you're not there. Get the fuck out of here. Digital divide, bro.
Look, Bert, if you want, because I'm coming up a day early. I'm being totally serious right now. I'll be up next Tuesday. We can go in either the valley. Because the kid that's putting the movie together with me, he lives in the valley. He's also colored. I'm sure he knows somewhere where you can get a proper hairline.
See, I don't want that straight edge. Like
you want you? Why?
I'm just not into it.
I'm just not into looking good. No, listen.
I'm not into having this obvious fucking 5 o'clock shadow when your hairline starts growing back and it's in the middle of your fucking forehead. Mm-hmm. If your hairline is your sexiest feature, just stay the fuck home.
Damn. This kitten's got claws.
Oh my god. How mean were the are the black kids that teased you in the lunchroom here now, Bert?
Do you really think I was getting teased?
According to Jason, he was in the corner. People
start crying after they start teasing.
Jason,
those tear filled ass whoopings of rage he was giving out.
Ass whoopings of rage.
Hey, we're gonna go together to the barbershop.
Oh,
and I will interview the barbers for you.
So important.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll say, this is my younger brother. And
then they're gonna laugh.
Wear a different shirt.
Nigga, I can't just wear this one. I have a plethora of
He does.
And they're not black enough for the white kids line.
And we're going to go there and say, hey, can you guys give him a proper hairline? Not too sharp. But we can't have you using those over-the-counter Walmart clippers either. We need you to have him, give him a nice line.
See, you're not going to be able to make that many requests before bruh's just like, just sit down in the chair. I'll hook you the fuck up.
No, Bert. Trust me on this. Just trust me.
The guy with six Asian children. I don't trust you, Nick.
And you know what? Ooh. They all have wonderful hair.
You saw to that.
I won't say what I'm going to say. I'll probably say it off air. It is kind of funny, though. But yeah, I did. They don't have that. My non-black mom can't do my hair either. No.
Oh my god!
Not everybody knows about that. I wish more people knew about that.
That's a real thing. It's like again, Boondocks, Jasmine.
You just do the pullback.
Yeah, no, did not happen. Did not happen at all.
Somebody said you traumatize your kids with your outfits. When you walk through the hood. Funny,
the oldest boy, they were teasing the oldest boy who's 20 because they said, oh, you're trying to dress like dad.
No.
Yeah.
Trying to dress like dad.
The oldest boy.
There's people in these comments talking about how I should get dreads, and they're not really thinking about the light-skinned dude with dreads, which comes with the complimentary Tupac nose piercing, is just like the sort of slam poet dude that I can't fucking stand.
It also comes with the 1-inch hairline thing in the front so that you don't completely lose your hairline with the dreads.
Wow. You guys are so mean to this guy, but it is funny. Don't get dreads, Bert. Don't do it.
You don't have to tell me.
I was actually sad when you cut the light skin natural.
Why did you cut your hair?
Because I had only... What?
She said, why did you cut your hair? I said, I'm trying to get paid.
I do want that Jake from State Farm job, but there's some other contenders.
That Don Lemon money. She wants you to have Don Rickles money. You're like, I'm trying to get paid like Don Lemon.
Nah, I just got tired of having the long hair. Like, I thought I could last and grow it out until it was something, but I'd always had, I mean, I'd had the short hair for so long, I just fucking miss it. Each day, it's just like, I don't know. I didn't know what to do with long hair. I'd had, like, clippers in a skin fade so long, and I guess I was fucking lazy, you know?
I mean, you're going to Armenian barbers, man. This is a whole, this, I gotta wrap my mind around that whole thing. You are in Los Angeles.
And Armenians have done good work. Just ask OJ.
Are you saying that because you and OJ have the same barber?
I should be so lucky.
Because that's what. Maybe I should go with you to the Armenian barbershop and just say, dude.
Somebody said you cut your hair because it started to nap up on you. Couldn't take that betrayal.
It is a lot to comb, you know? You got to get the wide tooth and the wavy. It takes time. Fuck that noise.
Because they fucked it up when you were little.
What do you mean?
I'm not going to get into it.
Oh, no.
It's a strategy. You got to have a proper strategy to this shit. This is chess, not checkers.
Yeah, Dr. Sebi. Oh, yeah.
Look at
that?
Phoenix. Look at young Phoenix.
No.
Let's check in on Phoenix when he hits puberty, because that's when the big change happens when you're mixed.
When he look.
That's when the hair changes.
It'll be an off-air conversation because I have to start yelling at different family members for. Ruining this project.
Are you trying to grow his hair down to the ground or some shit?
You've met Jayla.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You're saying she's an example of this mad hair chemistry you got going mm-hmm. on?
Yeah. God, oh, yeah, I got Indian in my family.
Yeah? Cherokee?
That too.
That mm-hmm. too.
A little bit of Sri Lankan.
He means the Jeep, Cherokee Jeeps. A couple people in the family have them.
Someone said Burt's barber is also Russell Brand's lawyer.
People really think I'm going to get caked up after this book deal.
Alan Kardashian Dershowitz.
People don't know I'm living on a public defender income.
Who's public defender? Dude. Jason kind of looks like a hipster barber. You guys are so... I told you guys, I used to cut hair and give curl waxes. Fades back fade. In the 90s.
Way back.
I was the man. Somebody hit me up recently on Facebook and was like, Jay, remember back in the day? You know, mama had that dryer chair. You used to give everybody ass curl.
Is that what you did to keep from getting beat up? Haircuts?
Wow. No. I had to fight and then be kind of funny.
It's a little too funny.
Again, I talked a lot of shit.
Light skin tears taste like almost white. See, why do I need a barbershop when I can just do this with y'all? Because this is what it is. For anyone who hasn't been, it's just this.
It is, but you can do it with other people as well, and they might have even crazier problems.
Man, Bert, let Alan Kardashian Dershowitz give him a lineup.
Kardashian Dershowitz. That's... For the free show, we've said so many offensive things for the free show that usually go on in the champagne room. I'm mildly terrified because I'm so used to this happening in the champagne room.
It's true. Like,
oh, no, this is a free show. And uh-oh. You know, I think we've crossed all the lines that we can cross. Bert, thank you for hanging out with me and going down memory lane with the Boondocks. Is there anything you'd like to say about this show in closing?
Nah.
Jesus.
I was happy to have the chance to rewatch it. And I mean, really, the vibe that was here, you know, it's a big part of why I missed the show. Because, yeah, you really can't do this outside of, like, a black barbershop. If you go to one, comedian shop, just fine. But, yeah, I missed this. And the Boondocks was a little bit of nostalgia on that point.
Toussaint, would you like to add your closing remarks?
No, this was a good time. It was nice walking down memory lane. Special shout out to the episode with Bob Ross. That was by far my favorite.
Ooh, that was so good. Or Bob Ross.
The sample at the end, if they reminisce over you.
Oh,
excellent.
I rewatched that, as an adult man, and I cried at the end.
You have to cry.
You know what she's talking about, Bert, where the Bob Ross characters. Yeah.
Yeah. He does a picture of granddad and his wife. Mm-hmm. Grandma. No, that's a good one. Also, just seeing Bob Ross.
I thought that was his parents.
Was that the parents?
No, that was granddad and his wife.
Is that right?
Yep.
I could be wrong.
No,
it is. I was guessing from the image, but it could have been parents.
There was a picture granddad had in the house.
Mm.
They don't talk about it much. Yep.
Interesting.
Yep. Bob Ross, same barber as you. The Boondocks never talked about a black barber, huh?
No. And they never talked about their damn parents.
They don't. I miss the Boondocks. I miss shows like that. I was actually kind of sad that a show like Astronomy Club didn't get a second season. I don't think these shows sadly hit the way they hit, you know, decades ago, or now we can say decades ago. Living Color, Chappelle Show, Boondocks, what else? Cosby. I don't know.
Yeah, it's fractured audience.
fractured audiences, you know, people fighting for the same kind of audience. I don't know. I don't know if we can get the Boondocks back again. They were going to reboot it, and then that didn't happen. And of course,
got shelled. Yeah.
Some people passed away, kind of like with King of the Hill too. You know, you got some kind of integral members of the cast passing away. The show can't really, in my opinion, it can't happen without Granddad.
Sure.
You don't really want to try to redo that voice or redo that character. I don't think it works.
Yeah, I mean, maybe I'm just missing it, but to Toussaint's point about The Simpsons and having a neighborhood and having that many characters, I really just can't think of another show right now that has that many different examples of people you meet growing up in a place that's like very black, even though it's mostly taking place in Hillcrest.
There isn't one. And there wasn't one on network television.
No.
with that many kinds of maybe again maybe the Cosby Show, but the characters are just in and out guest appearances. The Boondocks, a lot of these people were reoccurring. Gangstalicious, Thugnificent, and the Lethal Interjection crew with Busta Rhymes and Snoop Dogg were reoccurring characters.
It's impressive how much support the show got right off, you know, like just off the rip. Like Samuel Jackson's doing a voice. Like
it was again. We have to remember how revolutionary this show was visually, sonically with the soundtracks. These weren't popular rap songs they were playing.
So was the comic strip.
Mm-hmm. And so, I think people wanted to be part of something that was going to change the game.
Yeah.
And that show for that moment, it did. And I think the episodes, for the most part, still hold up. I'm sure younger people might have a problem with some of the terminology that was used that was a little more common. I think people might have a problem with, you know, even Huey, who's a pretty staunch black nationalist. That
might he led a prison riot.
But again, go back and watch the first episode.
I think the problem is probably that the people who would disagree with the show haven't been to the black barbershop.
They don't know.
There's these shows about black barbershops of rich people in a black barbershop.
I never watched the LeBron thing. Is that what that is?
I've seen it, and I thought that shit was stupid because I was like, this is you people's barbershop. This definitely wasn't mine because, again, it was in an interesting, colorful area, and colorful things happened at that barbershop. Colorful things were said in that barbershop.
Less stereotype, but like as a kid, mine looks like the Coming to America one. It's just like a lot of fighting over sports. Some dude got back from like a fucking fishing trip and just a lot of just jokes and bickering.
It was old. It was dudes that were older than me because I was young. I started going there at like 14, 15. And then my friends from high school, I was like, you guys got to get your hair cut at my barbershop because it's just crazy there. And you won't believe the shit that goes on there. And everybody went to Primetime was the name of the barbershop.
Did you ever get to have like two people at the chairs and like they work there every day, but they fucking hate each other because that's just the most hilarious thing in the world?
There was a pretty decent vibe with the guys there. I'll be honest. The guys there, they were all pretty chill. One guy actually got killed, and that was real. We were all real hurt when he got killed, but he definitely lived a certain kind of life. But the shit that they would say to us as young teenagers and the things that they exposed us to, I wouldn't change those moments for anything in the world. And I'm glad I got to have them. And I'm sad that you go to the Armenian barbershop. But that place is gone now. You know, Ken Carter got rid of all that stuff. And last I went there, I think it was a beauty supply place. I don't know what it is now. No, I never had it. I did have a senior barber before I went to Primetime, and he was an old, old black man. And you could only pick the haircuts you wanted from the pictures on his wall, and the pictures on his wall was from like when segregation was legal. So it was only the haircuts niggas was allowed to have, like 1947.
That's what we had in like my town in Jersey, in Mount Holly's place called Tom's. I mean, Tom isn't around anymore, but Mr. Tom was like so old. Like, it sounds ridiculous, but he was still cutting hair with the breathing.
Oh, Jesus. Smoked his whole life.
He liked cutting hair and he liked fishing. That's about it.
Oh, no, man. Jesus. I won't even get into the things that went on in that barbershop. Oh, my God. Whew. But on that note, tell us your favorite barbershop story. People left some really funny comments about this. What show do we do, Tucson? We asked people to tell us their Halloween costume when they were kids.
Oh, I don't remember.
People were leaving some funny stories about their favorite Halloween costume. Tell us your barbershop stories, because I joke with Bert, right? We're all joking about these barbershop. Every barbershop's the same. You can go to a white barbershop in a poor white area or a suburban white area, and people talking shit, arguing over sports. It's all the same. Toussaint, what was your barbershop like?
I actually went to a beauty shop.
Was it like the one that Queen Latifah ran in that movie?
It was unisex, so the barbershop was in the front. And the ladies were in the back.
Was it Haitian?
No, they were Jamaican. So they would play Jamaican radio, which usually there's these shows where, like, they'll play music, but interspersed in between it, they'll help people with their immigration. Yeah, they'll have a lawyer on that helps people with their immigration.
Only in New York City.
Gotta love it.
Gotta love it. I want to hear everybody has a barbershop, beauty shop story. I don't care who you are, where you're from, you have a story about going to a place, and it was your place that you went to. There's a barbershop that my brother used to go to when I lived with the White family in Martinez, California, where the guy gives free haircuts to anybody that's got to go to court.
That's nice.
Wild.
Yeah, he hates the court system. He always yells. You got to go. You fucked him up. And he gives you a nice look nice before you go to court. So I want to hear all your barber stories. Leave them in the comments. Toussaint, I won't see you for a while. Bert, I'll see you next week. We'll hang out.
What day?
Okay, I forgot I got to make an appointment with fucking Hunter S. Thompson over here. I can't just do the nigga shit and just show up.
Apps shit. If we were doing nigga shit, I'd tell you to come by and I wouldn't answer the fucking door. I'd laugh my ass off too.
Nice.
I'd look out the fucking window at you like. But nah, bro. I'm just asking what day like a job or I don't know, writing a book I've been working on for like 5 years. Some shit.
Oh God. Yeah, it's all the whole life story.
I would assume we'd sync up more, you know, with you having to juggle like 15 shows and four children.
We'll talk off air. Thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Again, barbershop stories. I want to see them.
Beauty shop stories.
Beauty shop stories if you're Toussaint. And I want to hear your Jamaican beauty shop stories if you're Toussaint. And we are...